worry, I'll be fine. The story's just beginning. I say goodbye to my weakness, so long to regret.
Taking over the number one spot, knocking Avenged Sevenfold straight in the face, knocking them out cold. It's a brutal fight at the top.
Down and out.
Down and out. But Avenged Sevenfold will come back fighting next week. Maybe they'll take over the number one spot. That was Shinedown, of course, with Diamond Eyes. That's a wrap for us. We'll be back next week with more of the biggest songs in rock, plus songs handpicked by me for you.
We're tapping out.
We're tapping out. I'm Nikki Sixx.
I'm Carrie Kasem.
See ya.
Inside Show is now over. Go ahead. Stick a golden fork in it. We're done.
Say you want a revolution. Well, you know.
The revolution starts now.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF.
That's 313-298-9743.
Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Hi, Jolene.
Peter, hello.
This is going to be such an over-the-top show, don't you think?
I think that our plate is full.
Drugs.
Drugs.
Sex. Religion.
Definitely. Religion, rock and roll.
Protests.
God, guns. Oh, wait, we said that.
Michael Moore. Michael Moore was in Madison, Wisconsin, all those enormous demonstrations defending the standard of living of the working class and the middle class.
The demonstrations, where did the media go?
Yeah. Well, actually, you said that on our Facebook, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it's not sexy anymore. You know, it's just regular people trying to defend their standard of living and their rights against these billionaires and these right-wing politicians.
Yeah, and everyone has their head up Charlie Sheen's business, you know. Do you know anything about that, Peter?
I am proud to say I have no idea what's going on other than he went off in some tear against his boss. I mean, he could beat up women all the time, right?
Well,
and nothing ever happened to him.
He's got goddesses now, see, and this is America's fascination, that he's got these two babies. One a bikini model and one a porn star, and they're his goddesses, and they're just, you know.
Why are all these women always?
Time.
Why are these women always called porn stars? What about, aren't there porn extras?
Yeah, I know. I think that she was a main character.
Okay.
Right.
Well, I couldn't care less.
I know, but that's what I'm telling you. It's a sad state of affairs when that is what people are talking about more than anything else, any of these important issues.
Well, are people talking about them, or is this just what the media is feeding us? And then it's a loop.
It's all of it.
It's a loop.
It's a big, big loop. But we're here because we're an oasis, Peter. This is the 2 hours where you can actually, 2 hours per week, really, where you're going to get the real news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can call in and make news. 313.
Yes.
Take our phones off the
hold. Yes.
There you go. 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
And for the bashful, and when the lines are filled, call talkyes@yahoo.com. Call talkyes@yahoo.com. You do best to send short messages. And Facebook friends wanted. It's beginning to fill slowly, but we welcome folks. We have a discussion. Isn't that what it's called? Yeah, a discussion little panel.
Yeah, like a Oh, yes.
And
yes.
People are only posting articles. Come on. I mean, that's okay, but talk, too. You know,
tell
to
us
one another.
Something about the article,
yeah,
too.
Right, right. We have a podcast available at noon on Mondays, thanks to Aaron. And Aaron is joined by two new assistant
yes.
co-producers.
Athena and Sarah, welcome,
yeah, welcome
to the show.
Yeah, thanks for your help. We really have, oh, here's what I was looking for.
Yeah, we're right in front of your face.
Yeah. Okay, let's just, one of the things I want to talk about is this flap. Now, you could say this is almost like a step, like above
Charlie
or below
Sheen
Charlie
land.
Sheen, but it's about
yeah,
Kid
this
Rock.
This is a real issue.
Yeah, yeah. And so maybe I'll just like throw this out because this is the kind of thing people like to argue about, but
well,
this is
a rock station.
It is. And it suggests a lot of things. So I want to throw this out, but I want to talk about Madison and what's still going on about this alleged deficit and why we're quote broke, which we ain't. But
that's
here's
right.
the deal. The NAACP is going to present Kid Rock with the Detroit branch's Great Expectations Award at their annual dinner that's coming up on May 1st at Cobo Center. They're going to usually get about 10,000 people. I don't know if it's still true, but the NAACP in Detroit was always the largest chapter in the entire
right.
country. So for anyone to get these kind of awards, it's very, very prestigious. And I think it's wonderful that someone like Kid Rock is giving back to the city from which he comes.
He's done a lot. He
yeah,
really has.
He's a lot, and he is becoming a little more out of his right-wing political thing. He was at John Stewart's rally in Washington, doing duets with
Sheryl Crow.
Sheryl Crow, yeah,
yeah,
right. But
done a lot for the city. So remember this, people, when yeah. we go into this other area.
Well, I just want to talk about this for a minute. But Adolph Mongo, a longtime political consultant and head of Detroiters for Progress, said he and others will boycott Kid Rock's use. He's going to boycott the deal because of his use of the controversial Confederate flag during performances. I remember I saw Kid Rock for the first time.
Yeah.
Years ago mm-hmm. at the Motor City Music Awards.
Yeah.
And I went up to him. He was walking through the lobby, and I said, man, you are really terrific. And you would think he would say, well, thank you. And he says, ah, you know what? The rockers say I'm a rapper, and the rappers say I'm a rocker. And
yeah, well, now he's kind of gone.
I say, nice talking to you,
yeah.
man.
And, you know, he's morphed into a lot of different things yeah. in his career, which shows incredible talent and longevity. But when it comes to this Confederate flag issue, that's where I go, over here.
Does he have it up every single show?
I've seen it. I've seen it
That's
many
terrible.
Times. And I don't know. You guys, someone will have to tell us because neither of us went to his latest rounds yeah. of birthday shows.
Now, Adolph Mongo said that he's going to boycott the Detroit NAACP annual fundraiser because Kid Rock flies the Confederate flag. It says it's controversial. Why is it? It's not controversial. It, as this Mongo says, it's a symbol of hatred and bigotry. I mean, people may, I don't think everybody says, oh, I'm going to fly it because I'm a bigot and I hate people.
It's Southern pride.
But it is, yeah, well, it's a slap in the face for anyone who fought for civil rights in this country,
That's
says
right.
Mongo. But interestingly, the NAACP in Detroit defended the honor, saying Kid Rock has consistently lifted up the great expectations of many persons concerning the future of the city. This was Donnell R. White, interim executive director of the Detroit branch NAACP. Kid Rock and his representatives couldn't be reached, but in a 2008 interview with the Guardian newspaper in Britain, he said the flag to him represents Southern rock and roll. So why the hell would he fly? I almost said it. That's BS. Because why in the world would an urban rocker like Kid Rock...
Yeah, but he's gone...
I know,
a lot
but
of
even
Southern
before that
now,
have...
Touring with Skinner.
Yeah, I mean, okay, that's it. I mean, all the great big Southern rock bands, which are...
Skinner. And Skinner.
Do you include Florida? I mean, there's Marshall Tucker, who is a far right wing character.
And, oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. And who's the
other one?
Gator Rock guy?
Well, Rock.
Yeah, from Florida, but that maybe doesn't count. I don't get it. I mean, for one thing, the Confederate flag is the symbol of the greatest traitorous act of the United States ever. And my great great grandpappy.
Yes.
Was wounded.
Yes.
By one of these Johnny Rebs flying that battle flag.
Right.
And all through the 1950s and 1960s, the racists always flew that flag. And you can put it up, you can put it down. I mean, there were so many disputes in the South about these Southern state flags and all that. And it means only one thing. And if you, you know, if you think, well, gee, I just mean it as rebellion, or I just mean it because...
Okay, white person. Is, yeah, why are you asking right. a black person? Every yeah. thread that I've seen kind of on Facebook, in fact, there's someone within our vicinity who had one up, and every person was white who answered it. And I wanted to come in, go in there, but I try to stay out of some of these things, you know. Once in a while, I choose my battles. I wanted to say... Why don't you ask an African American how they feel about it?
Why would
how can a
why yeah mm. why would anybody fly something that is such an insult? I mean, it's like a Nazi flag to Jews yeah. or a Nazi yes. flag maybe to anybody. Anyway, yeah, these one of the things that that these guys want to do is there's a group in the South called the Sons of Confederate Veterans. And there was this General Nathan Bedford Forrest, who was the first Grand Wizard of the newly formed organization back then, 1867, called the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah, remember that?
Forrest had been a slave trader before the Civil War, and he was also a commanding officer during the battle known as the Fort Pillow Massacre in Tennessee, in which they captured 300 black Union troops and just killed them all.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, talk about Nazis. Right? Flying,
that,
this was the flag that
flag
was flying
was
that was
flying.
Going.
Right.
It is actually thought that the introduction of 200,000 black troops is what finally tipped the balance. But the South was responsible for the deaths of more Americans because, you know, initiating the war, trying to secede to maintain slavery. And that's all that the Civil War was about. It wasn't about anything else. I mean, it had an economic and political quality to be sure. I mean, I don't want to
get into
all
that. You know, and if you think about something else, you made it up. You made it up, or you had a bad history teacher.
Well, these sons of the Confederate veterans, they're not even getting a good hearing in Mississippi. The Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour, Republican, he said it won't become law because you know they wanted to have a license plate with the Ku Klux Klan. This is the sons what? Of the Confederate veterans want to honor. The founder of the Ku Klux Klan. Wow. And of course, guess what political stripe they're from? Right wing. What else? Okay. All right. So, got some of you wanting to talk about that. Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan with you on WRIF. And you can call in 313-298-WRIF. But whereas this may excite us, please just hang for a minute, because right now, as we talk, there's people planning to drive this country down economically. Well, 90% of it. The top 10%, they're going to be making more and more money.
Meanwhile, there's the guy I saw with the Yo Mama Obama sticker. Kid you not. Kid you not. I saw this.
That's what it said?
Yes. And it was...
I don't get any.
It's pure racism, Peter. So this is the guy who, if he's listening, would say to you, "Well, it's Obama's bringing it down." It's like, oh man. Yeah.
Michael Moore was in Madison, Wisconsin. Tens of thousands of people again. I mean, this is the real story. And it's like I said last week. We are now in the midst of an era that may go down in history, like the 1960s did, like the 1930s did.
I agree.
And
absolutely.
You can either be part of it, or you can just kind of watch it on television or not pay any attention to it whatsoever. But here's what Michael Moore said, and this is really important for
amazing
us.
Stuff here.
America is not broke. America is not broke. You know, this is a Republican fabrication. This is a right-wing slogan to get all of us to agree that we are going to eat our lunch, which is, you know, well, maybe it's the other way around. The rich people are going to eat our lunch.
They're going to eat us for lunch.
Yeah. Here's a conservative who is even halfway decent. His name's David Brooks. He writes in the New York Times, and he talks about the new normal. You've heard that a lot. Here's what he says. I tried to argue last week, make everybody hurt. This is about the deficit cutting over the last next several years. Here's what he says, make everybody hurt. He's trying to be fair. Make everybody hurt. The sacrifice should be spread widely and fairly. Well, you know what? That's completely a contradiction, because the rich are not going to hurt at all. Who's going to be made to pay for this? You've heard me say this before. Are the people the people that did not cause it, the people that are making out like the bandits they are the people that caused all of this in the first place? So Michael Moore says, contrary to what those in power would like you to believe, so that you'll give up your pension, cut your wages, and settle for the life that your great-grandparents had, America is not broke. Let's run by what Michael Moore said one more time. Contrary to what those in power would like you to believe, so that you, the one person that's listening right now, will give up your pension, cut your wages, and settle for the life your great-grandparents had, America is not broke. Not by a long shot, he says. The country is awash in wealth and cash. One more time. The country is awash in wealth and cash. Remember I was talking about that last week? And then we say, so wait a minute. Why are our states, why are our cities, why is the country at deficit? So here's what he talks about. He says the country is awash in wealth and cash. It's just that it's not in your hands, right? It's been transferred in the greatest heist in history from the workers and consumers to the banks and the portfolios of the ultra-rich. Today, just 400 Americans have more wealth than half of all Americans combined. Let me say that again. That's him saying it.
Yeah, well, 400, say it again.
400 obscenely rich people, most of whom benefited in some way from the multi-trillion dollar taxpayer bailout of 2008. Gee, who was president in 2008? Oh, yeah, it was George W. Bush, wasn't it? Now have more loot, stock, and property than the assets of 155 million Americans combined. If you can't bring yourself to call that a financial coup d'etat, then you are simply not being honest about what you know in your heart to be true.
Or you just don't get it.
Yeah.
My other argument.
Now, here's something else that, this is Michael Intrigulator. He's a little musical interlude.
Yeah. You're welcome.
He, Intrigulator, is a professor of economics at UCLA. He said the budget cuts being proposed will impede and may end the recovery. If the recovery fails, unemployment will increase and the financial crisis would be reemerge, will reemerge. Now, I mean, again, is this maybe, you know, it's not economics, politics, but this is about your future. Every single one of us listening, or at least, you know, I just don't think ultra-wealthy people listen to this show.
You don't?
No. So it's probably 100%. This affects 100% of us. The premise that the U.S. government is broke is false. The U.S. government has never defaulted and will not default on any of its financial obligations. Deficit spending is normal for a great industrial nation with a managed currency, and it has been our normal economic condition throughout the past century. History proves, and sensible economic theory confirms, that in recessions, increased federal spending, not balancing the budget, is the tried and true way to return to a path of sustained growth and high unemployment. So why in the world that President Obama is calling for compromise with the Republicans is insane. It just makes no sense whatsoever. He should be standing firmly, not only against any call for cuts in the budget, but he should call for hundreds of billions more of government spending in stimulus programs, like they had during the 1930s. What was called the Works Progress Administration, that built roads and bridges and parks and everything under the sun. Because we, you say, whoa, that's socialism. Well, we have socialism right now because there is this massive transfer of wealth from us, the taxpayers, into the hands of the so-called defense industry, which is really the war industry. And it creates some jobs, but it's really, really, it's not labor intensive, but it is capital intensive. So it realizes hundreds of billions of dollars of profits for these aerospace industries and what have you, but it doesn't provide the kind of ordinary jobs. Capitalism does not work without enormous government stimulus. Without enormous government stimulus. And you go, whoa, yes, it does. No, it doesn't. We're spending $1.2 trillion on defense and preparation for war and, you know, exotic military systems and Star Wars and all that. That is no different than spending money to hire people to build bridges or to roads or schools
or
whatever.
Sounds like a better plan to me.
Yeah, it sounds like a better plan. Yeah. And you can employ more people for this. If we were going to spend $1.2 trillion, I mean, what could we have? We could have $200 billion for defense and $1 trillion for doing the things that we really need, like fixing this country.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't then have any deficit at all. We wouldn't have any deficit at all.
I'd like to see my brothers and sisters of Michigan doing better.
Yeah. And here's what also Michael Intrigulator says. Eliminating waste in government spending is desirable, but that is not what the House of Representatives proposes. Indeed, the House budget failed to address the largest waste in federal government, namely in the military, and the House failed to move the most egregious subsidies, such as to oil companies. You know that, right? Oil companies don't hardly pay any taxes, and they're getting all ready to gouge us again. To adopt a policy of deep budget cuts at this stage of recovery is to surrender to irrational fears in the service of a political, not an economic, agenda. So why are they doing this? Well, the Republicans want to destroy, essentially they want a dictatorship. They want to destroy the Democratic Party. And, you know, it's nothing to write home about. But it's better than a stick in the eye. And the Republican,
it's better than them.
Yeah, I mean, until we the people get something better, I mean, it's unfortunate to say that they're virtually our only defense at this point. Although we are beginning to reinvent politics, and that happens at the ground level, as we see in Madison. And you'll soon see the Democratic Party, you know, running after saying, oh, hey, yeah, I believe what you guys do as well. But here's how we could very, very easily eliminate all this deficit, whatever. The United States is the richest nation in the world. So we, as Michael Moore said, we have all this wealth here. First and foremost, as we were saying, reduce the military budget substantially. We don't have these enemies that we had anymore. We could do the little things, like have all tax all stock transitions over $250,000, like 0.5%. That would do it. Eliminate the FICA ceiling, you know, on your payroll tax. Right now, you don't pay. If you make over $110,000, you don't pay. So these guys that are making $27 million, they pay on $110,000. You and I, because the average wage earner in America makes about $33,000, we pay to 100% on our wages. And most importantly, tax wealth. Either use it or lose it. So when wealth is maintained, somebody like Gates or Soros or, you know, all those other guys, the Koch heads or the Koch brothers, rather, if they don't spend their money in a year, it's taxed at 90%. Or you don't want to be that bad, 50% or something like that. That would take care of all of this. Here's some interesting figures, and stay tuned. Mike and Darren and Scott and Greg and
Summer,
we'll get to you. And most of you want to talk about Kid Rock.
And that's fine.
We'll talk about that. Here's what a plutocracy. This is the rule of the rich. We're supposed to have a democracy, right? A democratic republic for those
of
you.
Sorry, but we don't have one.
Yeah, we have a plutocracy and an oligarchy. That is a plutocracy, the rule of the rich, oligarchy, the rule of a few. And it's because of wealth. The top 0.01%. That's just, I forgot how many families. Let me see if it says here how many families it does. This is, by the way, in Mother Jones, wonderful magazine, motherjones.com. The top 0.01%, their income is $27 million a year. The top 1%, their income is $3,238,000. A year. Mm-hmm. Okay, when you, the top 0.0121%. The top 1%, it has a measly income of $1,100,000. The top 10% has an income of $164,000. Now, we're starting to talk about
more
not grand sum.
Yeah.
The bottom 90%, I gave too much here. $31,244. The bottom 90%, that's all of us.
Everyone.
That's everyone. I mean, think about the difference here. The richest 10% control 2/3 of American net worth. So, they had some other interesting things here.
It's very off balance.
Yeah, who's winning here? Wall Street profits up 720% between 2007 and 2009, right in the middle of a recession, right? Think about everyone you know who's hurting. Maybe you yourself.
Maybe you've lost your house, your job, you know.
720% Wall Street profits went up. Unemployment rate went up 102%. And America's home equity, what your house is worth, down 35%. So, that's why we say, right? Eat the rich. They're eating us, right? It's really wonderful, too. The majority of people back employees in public sector unions. Americans oppose weakening the bargaining rights of public employee unions by a margin of nearly 2-1, 60% to 33%. A slim majority of Republicans, naturally, favor taking away bargaining rights, but they're outnumbered by large majorities of Democrats and independents who said they oppose weakening them. They oppose 56% to 37% cutting the pay or benefits of public employees to reduce deficits, breaking down, of course, along similar lines. So, and everyone supports taxing the rich to solve this. Mm-hmm. So why does Obama,
except for the rich,
and Obama says, well, we got to cut something. Yeah, you don't have to cut anything. In fact, should be spending hundreds of billions of dollars more. By the way, of course, leading the charge are these multimillionaire talk show hosts, of which Jolene and I are not in that group. Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, and Rush Limbaugh, and they have an interesting thing in common. They're all my union brothers.
Oh, yes, they are.
Every one of them,
right,
like me, is a longtime member of the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. I'm writing to see if I can get them kicked out.
Start a petition.
Kick their ass out.
Sorry, Peter, it's not going to work.
I don't think so. All right, let's take a couple of calls. 313-298-WRIF. And we brought up the subject that Kid Rock is going to deservedly get a reward, an award from the Detroit NAACP at its annual fundraising dinner for, where's that thing? What's it called?
Was it Heritage? No, I can't remember.
We got it. He's getting an award from, and there's a number of people that are saying, no, he shouldn't get this because he flies this terrible Confederate flag, which is the symbol of racism, and also was flown at every anti-civil rights demonstration. You can see that. I mean, there's Martin Luther King marching in Birmingham, and these flags.
Here's something the kids these days can relate to. Google it, and you'll see. It's Google Images.
All right. So what do you think about that? I say it's the flag of the biggest traitors that have ever existed in America. Think about the Pledge of Allegiance. Forget about that they entered under God for some weird reason in the 1950s.
The 50s. Why do I always think the 30s?
But the main word in there is indivisible, and that's why it was put in there. It was affirming the
existence
of the United States, and the only reason the people that flew this flag was that they wanted to continue holding human beings as slaves. All right. Here's Darren in Washington. How you doing? And we should say it's Washington, Michigan. Hi, Darren. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Go ahead. You're on the air.
I just wanted to touch on the fact that I am not personally a Kid Rock fan. I am very aware of music. I listen to a lot of different kind of music, and I'm very up to date on music. And I just want to say that I've been listening to a couple other radio stations during the day, and it's a big topic, but I just want to say I think that it's way more over-exaggerated than anything on the political view of the flag itself. I think that I want to speak for Kid Rock himself, what he said was, it's Southern rock, it's stuff like that. He doesn't think that far, and neither do the fans. They're, you know, his drummer, first of all, she's a black lady. She has been in his band for years. And
Stephanie, yeah.
You know, the thing is, that's not how it is. That's really not how it is. And I don't understand how people always have to pick apart things.
Wait, in your opinion, that's not how it is.
Yeah, wait.
So African American.
Why would anyone, listen, Howard Stern has a black sidekick, and Robin Feathers.
Quivers. She quivers with feathers.
And, I mean, he says sometimes damn racist stuff. I can't believe that she says
that. I don't know how she puts up with
it. She does. Multi-millions.
There's a lot of money. Now, also, Peter, think about the things he says you know, downgrade, demeaning women. Yeah.
But the point being, I mean, living in the world and living in the United States, I know what that flag represents. And if I thought, you know, this would be kind of cool because I like the South and I like Southern rock and,
it's,
you know, it's a little rebellious. And then I'd think, man, you know how many of my neighbors are going to find that absolutely offensive and think that I'm a racist? I think maybe I'll find some other symbol. But when you choose that, well, I think, you know, I think you're making a statement. And to me, this is about, and I'm not saying, listen, I don't think he's a racist, but I think he's flying a flag that represents racism, particularly to black people, but to millions of white people like Jalene and me as well. All right, thank you. Appreciate your call. Here is, let's see. Here,
it's important that people get that you don't think he's a racist. You just isn't going further, like the caller said, right? Go further into the meaning of it, that Kid Rock's not going any further than the Southern rock.
Well, yeah, statement. maybe since he thought, well, man, I'm not going to, you know, he's a pretty ornery guy. I don't think he's going to, someone criticize him. I'll bet you he's damn proud to be getting this award from the NAACP.
I should hope so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I don't think the NAACP would give it to somebody who was overtly a racist. And,
no way.
Yeah. It's called the Great Expectations Award for what he's done for Detroit. And no quarrel that he deserves it. Here's Scott in Clarkston. Scott, hi, you're on the air. Hey, Scott, wait a minute. I
once per show. It's
yeah, yeah.
Bad.
All right. Hey, Scott, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
We're
good.
Doing good.
Hi, Scott.
I wanted to had a few comments, but I'm going to make it short and just comment on the Kid Rock one. I'm a Kid Rock fan. I do listen to his music. I think that him flying the rebel flag, I think the only way that he should have a rebel flag in his house or on his property is if he's got a remake of the General Lee.
The what?
Oh, so it goes along with the Dukes of Hazzard car?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And I was watching a special about, you know, him and his little studio he's got in Clarkston. He's got one flying in his house. And it not only is it a racial flag, and I don't think any white person should fly it regardless. It shouldn't be flown in the north.
Shouldn't be flown in the south. I mean, here,
think about
listen,
the people,
you know,
ancestors who live in the south or have to look at that.
I'll tell you, Scott, the men who fought under that banner were like the Tea Party people. In other words, the reason that the Civil War was fought was to maintain slavery, pure and simple. No other reason. Slavery, in fact, when slavery was ended, it was the largest appropriation of private property in the history of the world. And the slaveocracy was the basis of Southern wealth and of Southern political power, Southern economic power. And they were, they thought that free labor would jeopardize their economic wealth and also their political domination over the U.S. government. So so all these Johnny Rebs, like the one that shot my great-great-granddaddy, Red Bigum, he sounds like a Southerner.
Red Bigum.
Yeah, Red Bigum. Yeah, I lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah. He didn't have any slaves. I mean, I forgot, something like 10% or 12% of Southerners had slaves. So these guys, just like the Tea Party, are acting out the billionaire Koch brothers script to make them richer, and it will make the average Tea Party person poorer. Dumb old Johnny Reb, he went and got killed and killed people to the point that something like 450,000 Americans died. All right, I gotta go. Thank you very much, Scott. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jalene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Are we there yet?
Not yet.
You think we'll be there soon?
Mm-hmm.
We're not lost.
When you head out on these long family road trips, you don't want to be in the car any longer than you need to. So I don't even start unless I've got the right guidance.
Turn left now.
I'm like that with taxes, too. TurboTax has a unique GPS feature that guides me step by step. It searches for every deduction and credit I deserve, which helps me know it's done right and gets me to my maximum refund guarantee.
Try it online now at TurboTax.com. Choose easy. Money-back guarantee details at TurboTax.com.
And now here's another tax tip from TurboTax. While college tuition costs can add up fast, the deductions and credits can add up too. That's because this year, the American Opportunity Credit for college tuition is up to $2,500. This amount is available for all 4 years of college and for each student in your family. It even covers the cost of books. To find out more about how TurboTax can help you get the maximum refund you deserve, visit us online at TurboTax.com.
We met through an online dating service. A perfect match.
We had everything in common.
Even our car insurance.
We both have e-surance because we both love discounts.
We had a little scare, though, because I got all my e-surance discounts over the phone.
And I got all mine on their website.
But we realized it didn't matter how we got our discounts.
As long as we both had them.
To get your perfect car insurance discounts, get a quote today at esurance.com or 1-800-ESURANCE. E-surance, technology when you want it, people when you don't.
Not available in all states. Some restrictions apply. Discounts may vary by state. See site for details.
I love your eyes.
My mom is my hero. She goes into burning buildings. She finds people inside who need to be saved. She helps them get out, even when she can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My mom is a firefighter, but the best thing she can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. Smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
These days, carrying a mortgage can overwhelm even the strongest person.
Don't I know that?
But there is a way to help ease your struggle, especially if you're facing foreclosure. One option may be advice from a certified foreclosure prevention specialist. It's absolutely free. Don't struggle. Learn more at www.makinghomeaffordable.gov. That's makinghomeaffordable.gov. Because foreclosure is not a foregone conclusion. A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Peter and Jolene, you're listening to Night Call, the list award-winning talk show on 101 WRIF.
All right, welcome back. 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
We have no open lines right now, but just
there
remember that one. There will be.
We're
in the Confederate flag, Kid Rock. Kid Rock is getting an award from the NAACP. We say he deserves it. He's done a lot from Detroit. He's getting the Great Expectations Award.
You need to quit flying that Confederate flag.
Yeah. Exactly. Here's one more thing ought to get you going. The First Amendment protects hateful protests at military funerals. The Supreme Court ruled on Wednesday in an 8-1 decision. The Chief Justice wrote, speech is powerful. It can stir people to action, move them to tears of both joy and sorrow, and as it did here, inflict great pain. He's talking about this, what's it called again, the Westboro Baptist Church, mm-hmm. Topeka, Kansas, that they, most of us think, total whack jobs.
Yeah, because they go and they protest military funerals because of the don't ask, don't tell policy.
Yeah, and they say America's doomed, God hates fags. That's their big thing. That
creepy.
The reason that we're experiencing the battle deaths as opposed to this wrong-headed policy, the lies that got us into Iraq and Afghanistan, and the continuation by Obama, it's because God is punishing the United States. So this the father of one of these
Service members?
Service members. He sued the church, won several $1 million, and that was overturned by a court of appeals and affirmed 8-1, which means even the far right wing justices, Scalia and Clarence Thomas, voted for it. One guy voted against it, Sam Justice Alito. And the deal is, here's the deal. Under the First Amendment, Chief Justice Roberts said, we cannot react to that pain by punishing the speaker. Instead, the national commitment to free speech, he said, requires protection of, quote, even hurtful speech on public issues to ensure that we do not stifle public debate, close quote. But here, this is important. It was the latest in a series of First Amendment rulings from the Roberts Court. Last year, the court struck down laws limiting speech about politics. This is the way it's put here. But actually, this allowed, there was this case called Citizens United, and this allows now corporate money to be pumped into the political elections in a manner that it never has before.
Limitless.
So that that now, and this is what the right wing is all about, and this is, of course, a very right-wing court, allows corporations to dominate politics. And it's part of the whole Republican move, as I said, to destroy the Democratic Party. And one of the ways they want to do it is to destroy unions. Now, of the top 10 contributors, the political election, the first seven are corporations. The next,
surprise, surprise.
The what would it be? The 8th, 9th, and 10th are unions. You get rid of the unions, it's all corporations.
It's all them.
It's almost all corporations now. In fact, I'm surprised. It only is through the intelligence of the American people, and that we can't be constantly fooled by these billionaire agendas that are acted out by the Republican Party and their stooges, like people in the Tea Party. But let's see, in the, also they overturned the law that made it a crime to distribute depictions of cruelty to animals. They allowed, in other words, they had laws against that. Now they overturned that. I mean, they said, look, there's laws against cruelty to animals, but you cannot stop the distribution of films about it or videos.
Right.
Let's see. They seem likely, based on the justice's question, to strike down a law banning the sale of violent video games to minors. Sure, give the kids violent.
Are really bad.
Yeah.
Some of them.
Yeah. Let's see if.
Stop trying to take your video games or your guns.
Yeah. So, but one of the things that they said was that there can be laws that that does not allow picketing, for instance, on a public street 1,000 feet from the site of a funeral. And that actually the Westboro Church complied with that law and with instructions from police, and they protested quietly and without violence.
Well, wasn't that mighty nice of them?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so the point being, but
not
see,
if their signs aren't enough.
Yeah, the problem is that you could then say that someone says once the Republicans now run everything, then you could say, you know, you could show up with a sign saying, I don't like the Republican Party. And they could say, oh, wow, that's making people angry. Or well, what they did during World War
I. During 1984-ish all over again, like worse than ever.
During World War I, people were imprisoned for passing out the First Amendment because that free speech had been so repressed under the Wilson administration during World War I. So we don't want to get into that again. All right, 313-298-WRIF is our number. And let's see, here is Mike. Mike's in Birmingham. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. Welcome.
How you doing, Peter? How you doing, Jolene?
We're good.
Hi, Mike.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about John Boehner. And
Who's John Boehner?
Boehner.
Oh, John Boehner.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
You needed to clarify that.
Boehner, whatever his name is.
Well, we know that when two vowels go walking, the first one does the talking, like Hohner harmonicas. All right, go ahead. Yeah.
Boehner, the tan guy.
The Speaker of the House, yeah.
So anyways. He's talking about cutting slashing cuts to Social Security, and you know, okay, I collect Social Security because I'm on disability, and I only make like.
Are you with me?
Wow, Big Brother just cut him off.
Yeah, yeah. So that's well. Let's do this.
I only make.
Aaron,
you will be cut off.
He's gone.
Yeah, that was weird. Just call back though. Give us a call back.
Yeah. All right. I didn't do it. Here is Summer. Summer's in Plymouth. Hi, Summer. You're on the air.
Hey there. What's going on, folks?
We are doing a talk show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I am really enjoying it. I stumbled upon you guys when I was driving, but I just want to comment on two quick, super quick things.
Sure.
One about the Kid Rock thing and the Confederate flag.
Yes.
You know, because you can't check a combination of boxes, I check the black, you know, identified box, you know, African-American, I guess they call us now.
Right.
Although I don't really like that phrase because I'm as American as anybody else. But anyway.
Everyone has their own preference.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But my thing is that, you know, my mom's people are from the South. You're in Kentucky. And, you know, I grew up listening to all kinds of music and everything else. Mm-hmm. And I'm comfortable going to a country bar, what have you. But I can tell you that, yes, when I see the Confederate flag, I think of, like, scary stuff of my ancestors being killed and so on.
Because, thank you.
You know, there's another person who called in, and I'm not saying anything personal about him, but I think it's probably a shared opinion that a lot of people overanalyze it, and it's not really an issue. But the difference is that people who don't have the – people who – basically, people who are white have the luxury of not having to think about the depth of it.
Thank you.
You know, but
thank
if you're a
you.
Person of color, you're automatically going to think about that because that is your history. And that, like, that's the same thing of asking a Jew not to think of anything when they see a Nazi swastika.
Yeah.
But – you know, but me growing up Baptist, although I'm not anymore, but, you know, for me, even though that's not my religious viewpoint, and I'm more spiritual, a different kind of spiritual viewpoint, that swastika should still instill fear in me just because of what happened to other human beings.
Right.
So,
yeah, it's just like these folks are saying, yeah, you know, forget that Holocaust, that little thing, it did, you know, whatever. You know, I mean,
it's a luxury not to think of it that
yes.
way, because I can still go into a store nowadays in 2011 and go into some hoity-toity little boutique and know that they're watching me to see if I'm looking at it. Now, if I open my purse up to get my phone out, I gotta be extra careful and literally go very slowly so they can see that
that's
I'm doing
so
my
sad.
Phone. You know, but the other thing really quick too is I'm so glad you're talking about all this stuff that's going on now politically, because I think people don't realize that the over corporatization of America mm-hmm. is really going on politically, and if people are not being active and voting and getting involved in terms of contacting their congresspeople and doing things actively, we're going to go back, and we're going to be going back even further, and the middle class is already under attack, and people are thinking, yeah, I'm conservative, and I agree with these things, but it's like you're voting against your own best interests. Come
that's
on.
Yeah,
right.
Well, when are we going
shooting
to get that across to him?
That was
Summer,
excellent.
Thank you so much, Summer. Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
All
Summer,
right.
Thank you. I was waiting for a black person to call in and give me their point of view, because I've been hearing from a whole lot of white people, and I'm tired of it. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead and call 313-298-WRIF.
Well, the other thing is like I said, is that there are a lot of symbols in the world, and why anybody would choose one that would be so offensive to any segment of the population.
Yeah.
And even if you thought, quote, they are overreacting, they are reacting, no
yeah,
matter what you...
You can tell a blonde joke if you want to me. It's a whole other thing, you know?
Here's a little music. Talk about country.
We haven't changed
yeah. All of my friends,
oh,
we
God.
Should be leaving town. There really is better things to do than to be hanging around. We've got a date in a town named Michigan, and we're sending a protest wish again.
Ooh.
To all of those who still have ears, let them hear. Because we're going to the hash, and I'm a hash, and I'm a hash bash.
Oh, the hash bash.
We're going to see some folks, and man, we'll have some fun.
Yee-haw!
And the laws that they're making do more harm than the ones we're breaking. And we'll see you there. Don't be late.
All right, we're going to be playing that again because the Hash Bash is coming up in April, the first Saturday in April. And the man who's been responsible for organizing it for about the last 20 years and who has been on this program any number of times, mm-hmm. Adam Brook, is facing some bad situation.
Serious charges.
Yeah. He was just arrested on 8 felony counts, including possessing more than a pound of marijuana, well over the 2.5 ounces allowed to medical marijuana patients in Michigan, which he is. And also, they say that he had 2 loaded handguns, a loaded shotgun, and a bulletproof vest. Well, he has some defense. He said, where is this here? Apparently, he had been had a conviction for carrying a concealed weapon in the late 80s, so he's not supposed to be around any guns whatsoever. He said they were antiques, exempt from the firearm statute, and he says the body armor is a World War II keepsake left by Adam Brooks' grandfather. Well, I hope, Adam, I sure hope you can prove this, man, because you are in a world of trouble. But you know what that song says about hash bash? Well, so what if he had a pound? What in the world, what harm is he doing? Where's the harm here? That's what I want to know. Show me the harm, whether he had a pound or 100 pounds or a half a ton.
Harm is one thing, but there are laws, Peter.
Yeah. All right. Well, Adam, we wish you the best. All right. So back to our phone, 313-298-WRIF. Let's see here. Got to get some calls. And it's Maurice in Detroit. We haven't heard from Maurice in a while.
Maurice, where have you been?
What's happening? Maurice.
No, hey, Peter and Julie, how you doing?
Hey, Maurice, what do you think about Kid Rock flying the Confederate flag?
Well, I'll tell you this. If that's what you believe in, you go with it. But what are people's opinion about you, that's what you have to just take in and bear that. Yeah, I'm not going to knock you.
Okay.
I have bashed Kid Rock before about his music. But if that's what he believes in, that's him. He got to deal with it.
That's pretty cool of you.
But what I really called up for is this morning I Googled U.S. in the Middle East and oil, and I got back on, I went through three websites. This is what I came up with, Peter.
What's that?
Okay, for decades, the CIA and military supposedly been backing terrorists like the Muslim Brotherhood, Muslim Brotherhood, and the Taliban. That's what I came up with. You can go in and Google CIA and the Middle East and oil. That's what I came up with. I went to three different websites. That were all basically what they were saying.
We used to support, what was his name? Osama, yes.
We.
Been forgotten.
You supported him?
No, the government.
Oh,
United
the U.S.
States government.
Yeah. Oh, when you say, oh, yeah.
Not we, not me, Peter.
U.S. You got to put U period, S period. Yeah, 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 right. It was a lot of blowback. All right, we'll check it out. Thank you, Maurice. Let's see, here's Greg in Westland. Hey, Greg, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Peter, how's it going, man? Long-time listener.
Welcome.
Hey, look, you know, I heard what the young lady just had to say a few minutes ago, and it kind of changed my view a little bit. You know, hearing the other end of it, the other perspective, it put things in more perspective for me. But
good.
I come from Romeo, okay? I used to live there. I went to Romeo High School over Kid Rock, and I graduated. I know the way the town is. You know, I've met him a few times. I've been to a lot of his concerts. And he doesn't fly the Confederate flag at every concert. It's not a symbol of who Kid Rock is or what he believes in. It's a symbol of rebellion. I mean, yes, just like you stated, the Confederates was the greatest rebellion and the greatest act of treason in the United States history, the history of our country, right?
Right.
It's a gimmick, Peter, and that flag has so much deeper meaning than using it as a gimmick.
But you know what? I certainly agree with what I said before,
right.
But I think to a lot of people it is just, they see it as a sign of rebellion. And if someone said,
can come up with some other ones for you.
We do not think Kid Rock is a racist, do we?
No.
No.
How about just a peace sign, man? That's rebellious.
There you go.
Think about he had an album that was, it was called Devil Without a Cause. He used that, but I mean, we all know the saying, rebel without a cause, right?
Right, right, right.
You know, and he, like the caller, like your first caller said, he has an African-American drummer, and she's very talented.
Wow.
His whole band is
of course
awesome.
She's talented.
I'm
yeah, why would you
I
do
have
that?
I have a,
she's
I have
a woman and she's black,
fan.
Peter.
What's that?
Well, I don't know. Maybe, I don't think there's any way to resolve it. You know, it could be the kind of...
I think he can just take it down.
He is,
and
he's very possible. He's very possible about, that he's a work in progress as well.
Well, he is.
I mean, like I said...
One of the cool things about him.
I'll bet you the fact that he is getting this award from the NAACP probably is really having an extraordinary... extraordinary impact.
I really believe that after this is over, I think he's going to take those down.
Yeah.
I have faith. I have faith in you, kid.
Hey, we'll see. Is he listening? Give us a go.
I don't know. He's a world traveler, you know.
Yeah, he's everywhere. Maybe a few more calls than this. Here's Alex in Madison Heights. Hi, Alex. You're on the air.
Oh, hey. How you guys doing?
We're good.
Great. Hi, Alex.
Yeah, it would be great if kid called in. Yeah. It's a long shot, but you know.
He knows the hotline number.
Yeah.
Yeah, stranger things have happened.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make a little bit of a comment on his Confederate flag thing. I don't know, personally, I don't really care if he does it or not. It's kind of silly if you ask me. It's in light of the PC argument, I think it's maybe kind of a poor choice. if you really wanted to make a rebellious statement, I think you'd probably get the point across better, maybe flying the stars and stripes upside down, which is...
symbol of distress.
Yeah. It probably...
well, what do you think about what Jalene said? How about a peace symbol?
Bring me a peace sign.
But, you know, one thing is, I don't know if you've ever...
so wimpy, tree-huggery.
Yeah, Alex, I don't know if you've ever seen this, but he's got this, like, a couple, three-minute-long ad that that plays in the...
Movie theaters
about joining the National Guard. And I'm thinking, hey, kid, how old is he? Is he still eligible?
He just turned 40.
Yeah, well, I guess maybe
no,
you can't.
You can do it now?
Yeah, I mean,
42 now.
When it's in there, I'm always yelling, hey, kid, why don't you join? You know, like that. Because, I mean, the young men and women that are going over to, that are joining the Guard and wind up in Afghanistan or Iraq, you know, getting their faces blown off and all that.
Limbs,
and so,
dying.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe he'd fly the peace sign and then wouldn't be doing that anymore either. All right, thank you very much. I mean, I don't think anybody should join the service at this point. You know, we're not defending this country. We're just there was this old song from the 1960s called "Knee Deep in the Big Muddy," same part of the world as Afghanistan as well. Tea Party is in a spin, in a tailspin, according to a lot of. Yeah, it. I mean, ever noticed? I mean, it's Tea Party. Oh yeah, wow. People aren't talking about that anymore. Glenn Beck's ratings are down by a third. You know, if our ratings drop by a third,
later
you'd be hearing some music in this slot. According to Charles M. Blow, New York Times yesterday, the Tea Party is synonymous with anger. Anger defined it. Anger fueled it. Anger marred it. Anger became its face and its heart. But anger is too exhausting an emotion to sustain. A poll released Thursday by the Pew Research Center found that anger at the government among Tea Party supporters fell by 40% from September to this month.
That just says everything, Peter.
That's more than...
That is just unreal.
Yeah. Yeah. Furthermore, anger among Republicans fell by more than a half. Well, that's good.
Fewer angry Republicans, the better.
Yeah, and anger among whites. That's good.
Fewer white angry white people. Bring it all.
That's good.
I'm feeling real happy right now.
And then the Tea Party, suddenly their trust in government has risen.
Oh,
that's because
amazing.
Yeah, because
up, down, all around, they don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah, I don't think so. All right. 313-298-WRIF.
Did you see the time, Peter? I just wanted to remind you.
We don't have any commercials right now.
Oh, we're just going to roll?
Yeah.
We're rolling with it.
Here, we can, let me see.
We better do that one little tiddly-diddly.
Yeah, just to make us legal. Yeah.
Yes.
And then I'm going to play something else, so don't let it shock you.
We follow some rules, people.
Don't let it shock you. All right, here's this.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
You cannot petition the Lord with prayer!
Which introduces...
And that's not part of our legal ID, by the way. That's all us. Sorry, Mark.
Actually, you know, man, I got to put something in here.
Oh.
And I don't know if I think this is impossible. Can you...
just tell me what to do.
Just deal with that thing, and I will... I forgot about it.
Oh, yeah, this was really interesting, that something that, Peter, you sent to me earlier in the week, that Pope Benedict... says Jews not to blame for Jesus' death. Why does it matter? And this is exactly what I thought. This is a very telling of how much you and I think alike, Peters, because immediately after I saw that headline, I thought, yeah, maybe because he was in the Hitler Youth, and I looked down on your piece of paper, and you said, yeah, maybe because he was in the Hitler Youth. Unreal.
Well, I mean, that's nice. I mean, actually, the Catholic Church has considered the Jewish people free from blame since at least 1965.
Now, wasn't that nice of
them? Yeah. I mean, of course, it was 1,000 years of pogroms and crusades and the Holocaust and all that, because the church had declared that Jews are responsible for the death of Christ. But here, you know, there's another guy, though, whose name is Rob Bell. He runs the Mars Hill Bible Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He's got 10,000 members. He's a Christian celebrity. It's a mega church like the one you went to recently in Awe.
Oh, this is awful. I'm still scarred.
And he published this book, and it describes it as misguided. This is what he's saying, this head of a church. Misguided and toxic, the Christian dogma that, quote, a select few Christians will spend forever in a peaceful, joyous place called heaven, while the rest of humanity spends forever in torment and punishment and hell with no chance for anything better.
Burn in hell, all of you.
Yeah. Such statements are hardly radical among more liberal theologians who for centuries have wrestled with the seeming contradiction between an all-loving God and the consignment of billions of non-Christians to eternal suffering. I mean, so everybody who didn't accept Jesus, who didn't even know about Jesus, you know, their ass is grass, right?
Yeah, it was too bad.
And God is the lawnmower.
Yeah, sorry, I don't know what to tell you guys.
Yeah, Gandhi, you know, who else?
You know, maligned, whatever guy, you know, Gandhi.
Yeah, so so he's saying it's not true.
An angry guy.
And there was a guy that took over from Oral Roberts, who said that Jesus died for everybody's sins and didn't matter whether you believed in him or not.
Oh.
I thought that was nice.
Okay, that was pretty nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. But here.
Hey. Oh, this is bad. I mean, but it's still good.
Another one has bit the dust. Another one of these right-wing anti-gay ministers.
Yeah.
Actually, this is, I don't know if I sent you
this is in New Orleans.
The update, though.
Oh.
For years. This actually has somewhat of a happy ending. Let me see. What is...
Yeah, we got the same one.
Oh, we do. Yeah. For years, New Orleans area residents have known self-proclaimed Christian patriot.
Yeah, Christian patriot.
Yeah. Grant Storms is a religious crusader who is tirelessly...
That is such a gay porn name, Grant Storms. this guy, they ever think he was fooling?
Maybe he was just not a porn star, but a porn extra.
I am Grant Storms.
He's tirelessly tried to rid the city's French Quarter of homosexual influence.
Good luck, dude.
And they have something called the Southern Decadence Festival. He really was down on that. The celebration, often called the Gay Mardi Gras. Mardi Gras, which means...
I can't even remember.
Fat Tuesday.
Oh, well, duh. Because that's coming up.
It's right before Ash Wednesday.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And, you know, inevitably, every year I'll go up to someone and say, you know, you got something on your forehead right there. I've been to church.
And that, of course, Ash Wednesday comes from the ashes that are of Palm Sunday. You got to really follow this.
And then
this
there's
up.
That whole Lent thing where you have to give things up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well... The Gay Mardi Gras, Southern Decadence, draws homosexuals from around the country each Labor Day weekend, but the 53-year-old Storms has joined the ever-growing fraternity of evangelical moralists whose hypocrisy is exposed through an embarrassing sex scandal, and he offered an olive branch to the gay community. Storms, who Storms, who would frequently arm his followers with bullhorns, protest signs, and Bibles to take to the streets of the French Quarter, was arrested recently for masturbating in public at a children's playground.
At a children's playground. He chose a very choice place.
Aren't almost everybody at the point when they hear somebody, letting loose against gays when they're a minister or a Republican, you go, they're gay.
Yeah, you just count them in.
Yeah, they've got to be part of it. Storms held a tearful press conference in which he confessed that he was ashamed to have stuck his hands in his pants at the local playground.
Yeah, he wouldn't say he was masturbating. He just stuck his hand in his pants. Were you just adjusting? I don't think so, you pervert.
But he said he was Randy. From having viewed pornography just prior to driving his Ford Windstar van to the park. He also emphatically denied being attracted to children. I'm not a pedophile. I'm not a child molester.
Okay, so let me get this straight. Or maybe that's not the right word to use.
Yeah.
Okay. He got horny from watching probably gay porn because he is, in his own mind, a gay porn star with the name like that. And then he drove to a park. Is that where you go relieve yourself when you need to?
And the first story that came out, a mother is pulling up there, and there's old Grant Storms. You know.
Porn star.
Going at it, and so she called the cops.
Oh, good for her.
He says he's battling sex addiction and is now estranged from his wife and four children because of it.
Yeah, you think?
But he apologized to his friend and family for his behavior, and he requested the forgiveness of the gay men and women he spent years tormenting. And so all of these guys, I mean, in fact, if I was a Christian minister that was opposed to homosexuality, I would think, you know, I better not say anything.
Yeah, I'm just going to shut my mouth.
The hotline's ringing.
Wow, that could be interesting.
Yeah, yeah, all right. Well, we'll see. Well, let's get somebody else on the air while they, maybe someone's called them. All right.
This is a pretty close-knit city.
Yeah, yeah. All right, here's Kenya. Kenya, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how you doing? What's up?
I'm great. This is regarding Kid Rock. No one has seemed to mention that Kid Rock has half black children.
He's got what?
You know, his first son is black. You know that, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't think he's racist. I think he's just flying something that's a symbol of racism and inappropriate for someone who's getting an award from the NAACP.
I'm interested to find out how it is he's going to explain to his children that he can continue to fly this flag in the face of all this controversy. I mean, it's his right. I have defended it up, his right to express himself, but it is a symbol that means a lot of bad juju to people who are like me, who are descendants of slaves. But, you know,
thank
I'm not
you.
Gonna make a national case, but again, I'm a descendant of a slave, and we take it a little bit differently than most people do as far as, you know, intellectualizing it. To me, that symbol means death.
Thank you.
And wouldn't you like him a lot better if he didn't fly then?
To a point, yeah, I think I would, but I've always followed Kid Rock ever since he was touring with Run DMC. So, you know, I'm not going to change that. I just kind of disappointed.
Well, yeah, and we don't want people to not be his fans. We just would like to see that flag come down.
It's a teachable moment. Hopefully he gets taught. I don't know.
Well,
that was a wonderful thing to say. I love that.
Yeah, and you know, Kenya, I don't know if you heard me. Actually, you've been on hold, so you probably heard me say that he probably is extraordinarily proud of getting this award from the NAACP, and now he knows that people are criticizing him for it. And sometimes, you know, you can always dig your heels. I don't care what anybody says. I'm going to just... And then you can say, you know, I'm hurting some people.
Yeah, I'm going to think about this.
Yeah, and I'm really serious about getting that award, and no matter what I think, I got to consider how other people think. And I don't mean, you know, I don't mean you should... always be affected. I mean, I sometimes, Jalene and I have been in the position in years gone by where our views are have 90% of the people against us. We don't change our opinion, but something like that, it's peripheral and it just creates confusion. And rather than just celebrating the man's award, celebrating the work that he does for the city, celebrating the music he brings to the world, we're off on this little tangent that he shouldn't even have had in the game in the first place.
I know, and I'm hoping that everything will actually, a positive spin will come from this. And thank you so much for taking my call.
Hey, Kenya, that's what we're here for. Thank you very much.
Kenya. And you know what, Peter? It's what we talk about a lot is the ripple effect. And, you know, this could ripple to a lot of other, get Skinner to stop doing it too. And, you know, to people, we already have changed a couple of people's minds tonight just by talking about it. And thank you to the people who it affects the most, the two lovely ladies who have called in and told us their personal stories, because I've been begging them, please someone call, please someone black call.
Well, here are two people that descended from slaves.
That's right.
Right, Kenya. And you know what?
About it.
I don't think Kid Rock would say, screw them, who cares?
I don't think he would either.
I wonder what he would say.
I think he's a much more sensitive guy than that.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah. You know, by the way, speaking about racial stereotypes, at 1 a.m., I'm going to be interviewing Dean Ubadala. He's a co-headliner of a comedy routine that's coming to Dearborn called Arabs Gone Wild Revolution Tour.
I know, when I saw that, I thought, whoa, what's this? Okay.
And he's talking about using humor to dispel stereotypes, but mainly, it's not, you know, Kenya uses the word, and I think appropriately, the phrase teaching moment. And in many ways, this is a, something that probably, as he said, probably going to be about 70-80% Middle Eastern people in the audience. But if it's on a Sunday, so I can't go, you can't go.
No.
But I would love to be there. Also, at 1:30 a.m., John McMillan, who wrote this book called Smoking Typewriters, The 60s Underground Press and the Rise of Alternative Media in America.
Cool.
Discussing rebel publications of the 1960s, like the Fifth Estate newspaper.
That's still running today.
And he quotes a certain person, which, Well, in the...
Are you quoted in there?
And where, you know, do you have to give full disclosure?
Yeah.
I did.
You all did. Pierre, right. Way to go.
On the other hand, there's a Republican Representative Peter King of New York is convening hearings on the threat of homegrown Islamic terrorism. And there was a demonstration of about 500 people opposing that in New York City. Smaller, much, much smaller group in New York City yesterday. Yes. Saturday
yesterday.
Now,
yeah.
And you could say, and what, let me see, the congressman said, he said, opposition to it is nonsense. He said that Al-Qaeda is trying to radicalize Muslims, that the effort is the leading homegrown terrorism threat. Threat is coming from the Muslim community. The radicalization attempts are directed at the Muslim community. Should I investigate other communities? Well, you might try the white racist community.
Who did, let's start there.
Yeah, who did something like the Oklahoma City bombing. I know it was 15 years ago, but there was also, there's been in recent times like 19 murders carried out by the right wing. There's heavily organized and armed right-wing militia groups, and those are all something for, and including
Michigan, here in Michigan we've got.
So there's Christian extremists, there's actually Jewish extremists, there's any number of far right-wing armed Jewish groups as well, and there are Muslim groups. So there's all three. And why doesn't he investigate all three of them? Well, you know what? He shouldn't be investigating any of them, because what congressional committees are supposed to do is hold hearings in order to see what sort of legislation is needed. What kind of legislation could come out of investigating a particularly religious group? Like you could say, well, let me see, there's these Jewish extremists. Let's investigate the Jewish community. Let's investigate the Christian community. Because these are law enforcement issues, and they're dealt with in a manner that appears recently to be pretty successful. But this is like what happened in the 1950s under this Senator McCarthy, where it created all this hysteria. And, you know, you get these Republicans in power, and then everybody, I mean, everything gets immediately worse. It always sounds like Jalene and I are these big fans of the Democratic Party, and once the Democrats are in, we think everything is absolutely wonderful and all that. I mean,
that's not the truth. We're not Democrats. Let's start there.
Yeah, for sure.
We're not Democrats.
But
not Republicans.
You know, once the Republicans get in, everything is going to get more and more of a ugly. Ugly it is. 313-298-WRIF, and let's see, here is James in Ann Arbor, the home of the Hash Bash. Go ahead, James, you're on the air.
Hi. I had a couple things that I wanted to say, one about the Hash Bash and the other one about the Confederate flag issue.
Yeah.
With the Confederate flag issue, I just wanted to make it really quick. I don't agree with the use of the Confederate flag itself. But I had spent a period of time in the South, specifically in Georgia and Florida, and I had actually asked people who would wear it on their clothes or have a flag hang up in the back of their truck or whatnot, and I'd ask them, don't you consider that a symbol of racism? And I heard this from whites and blacks as well, because I'd seen African-Americans that would have a Confederate flag or whatnot, and they would state that it's more a symbol of heritage. Wow.
You know, that's the BS that they always run, man. I don't buy that for 1 minute. What, you know, well, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't say. Maybe I should give people the benefit of the doubt when they say something. But nobody's going to say, you know, I hate Negroes. You know, you know, that's
even if they're total even, racist.
Yeah, they're not
going to
say
it.
It's just my Southern
racist circle.
Why is this monstrous war that the South carried out to maintain slavery the symbol that they choose? I mean, isn't there a few other things going on in the South that's happened there you know, all that time? You know, and why are they so hung up on this war that A, they caused, and B, they lost?
Right. Why so proud?
Yeah. Why in the world would they maintain that? I mean, in fact, I just read a book by Philip K. Dick, who actually probably most of you have never heard of, but has written book after book that's been turned into a movie. And the most recent one is this new one with Matt Damon. that just came out. The something. Anyway, so you know what I'm saying? Why in the world would they keep bringing up this bloody rag that caused so much damage and destruction to their own part of the world and caused the death of almost 500,000 Americans?
I agree.
Okay.
Yeah. Good.
All right. Good. Think about that. Think about that. You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, in the, I mean,
it's really pretty simple, in my opinion. I just don't get it.
Yeah. There's lots of symbols in the world. And if it's like, for instance,
choose your symbols, man.
For almost all of recorded history, the swastika, it was this universal symbol of, of almost yin-yang, almost integrate. I mean, if you almost see, you know, the yin-yang symbol?
Yeah.
You think it's,
I say yin-yang.
But yin-yang, whatever. You know how there's a somewhat of a similarity. If you, you know,
yeah,
like
kind
that.
Of, yeah. Intertwined.
And it's all about intertwining. So you could have that as this Indian symbol, the Indian being, you know, Asian, South Asian Indian. And he could say, oh, you know what? I don't mean it as the Nazis. I mean it as connected up with this symbol of life and the, you know, it's somewhat. What's the word I'm looking
eternal
for?
Eternal life.
Or yeah, it's.
Balance.
What do you do? It's also.
Wait, they can't see that
handsome. No, I mean, it's fertility. That's what I'm looking for.
Oh, is that what that symbol is? Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to say that's what I mean it as. So I'm going to wear a swastika. And, I hope some Jews don't overreact.
You know,
hope some gays don't overreact.
This is my interpretation.
Yeah,
I hope that.
I hope some Slavic people that were butchered also, by that, they hope they don't get upset because I don't mean it anything
don't
to
mean
do
it
with
that. Don't misunderstand. Me.
Yeah. Okay. Here is Theo. Theo's in Detroit. Hi, Theo. You're on the air. Theo, are you with
Theo.
Me? Theo. Theo calls, so...
Call again, Theo.
I had to put
so
it
sorry.
On hold. All right. Yeah. Let's see. Here's Steve in Gross Point. Steve, hi. You're on the air.
What? Okay. Oh, boy.
Oh.
You know what?
What?
This is the best, because just what you finished your response on... I happen to probably be the only person in Grosse Pointe that, as my house was built back in 1928, I have a swastika on the front porch facade.
I could imagine that, actually, from that period.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. He scared me.
And when I bought the house, I'm looking at it, and I'm going, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about, I'm Polish, okay, and I'm thinking about all the Jews that were exterminated.
And all the Poles.
And, you know, with Hitler.
All the Poles,
Polish.
Too, as well.
What? Many.
Yeah.
Yeah. When the history lesson is when Hitler took the Third Reich, he invaded Russia and took the area which was Prussia, Poland, and that was his empire for fabricating and making the whole war effort of machinery to do his job.
Yeah, that's right.
Does that sound familiar? Weapons of mass destruction.
Bingo.
Lies.
But anyways, the point is, going back to Tim, okay, I'm gonna try to hope to settle some of the audience here because, you know, I see Confederate flag and I understand the history of that. And it was a terrible war. And more than 45,000 people, I'm sorry, it goes even beyond that. Thousands of soldiers were killed, injured, and maimed, and that life you can't bring back.
What
right.
was that number,
and
Peter? It was
what?
Bigger than that.
450,000.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking the Gettysburg was the number. I'm thinking 27,000, 29,000 people in one, you know, like a weekend battle.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point I'm going after is the Confederate flag is a piece of history. Let's fly it and remember what it means.
Why?
And where I'm really going with this is when I'm driving down the highway on my motorcycle and I pass one of my Detroit brothers or anybody else in the world that's wearing a what I call a Kraut helmet or a German motorcycle helmet.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't flip them off and tell them you're a racist. No. I say, cool. Dude, where are we going? Let's remember this.
For some reason, I feel like this is a whole, this is different, though, you know?
Well, the other thing.
I mean, I get what you're saying.
Yeah,
it's a
yeah.
symbol. I get what you're saying.
But I mean, that's another thing.
You know where that Confederate flag belongs flying? In a museum about that war. And that's it.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your calls. A man call. Singular. Casualties in the Civil War, at least 618,000 Americans died in the Civil War, and some experts say the toll reached 700,000, like that.
That's a bad one.
Yeah, it was a bad one. And the swastika is an equilateral cross with its arms bent at right angles, blah, 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 blah. Earliest archaeological evidence of swastika-shaped ornament date back to the Indus Valley civilization of ancient India. It remains widely used in Eastern religions, specifically in Hinduism, Buddhism, and Jainism.
It looks just a little different there on that.
It had a surge in popularity in Western culture. The swastika from the 30s became strongly associated with its iconic usage by Nazi Germany, which is not so good and kind of ruined it for everybody else.
You think?
Those Nazis.
I tell you. Peter, I've got an email, and I want to get it in.
I forgot about email.
Yeah. Pat from Mount Clemens wanted us to pass along there will be a protest rally on Tuesday, 9 a.m. at the State Capitol Building in Lansing. This is regarding pending bills. You know, the emergency managers have to have full and final say on union contracts, wages, privatization, and other anti-union, anti-democratic bills. Important stuff, and you know who you are out there.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. A friend of mine who works for the UAW just wrote and said, did I want to go up to Lansing for this demonstration? And I didn't know what time we would have had to leave here when.
Yeah, it's 80 few miles up there. I have school.
I have to interview the director of this movie, wonderful movie called Budrus. And it's about this village in Palestine and its cooperation of Jews and Palestinians in trying to stop the wall nonviolently.
They're cooperating.
Yeah, they're cooperating.
Well, that's good to hear.
And then what else? Got to do deep tracks.
Peter, Alex wrote, you cut him off. This is so shocking, before I could interject. And this is way too long, Alex. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Alex, just so you know, we got your email. Peter doesn't cut people off. What are you talking about?
I do cut people off. Here is the deal. You know, this, unfortunately, is not a conversation that one would expect to be able to start and then finish. Or one caller, we could go on for 20. Yeah, I mean, it's the nature of talk radio. And sometimes I think we ought to tell the phone screeners that to tell each caller that Peter may end the conversation without saying goodbye.
You know what? That's a little too much, because when those phone calls are coming in and I'm telling them, get the call, put them on hold, and get them to us.
Yeah.
So we'll try to remind. We got one from Daywan, who wrote in, the subject line was heritage, not hate. He said, I hear that said too, but the problem is that the heritage is hate.
Okay.
Right. Thank you.
Here's Tyler in Wayne City. Tyler, hi. You're on WRIF's Night Call. Welcome.
Hi, Peter. I was on Wednesday. I was on Yahoo, and I read about the story about the soldier's funeral being protested.
Yes.
And they said something about the First Amendment. But what really kind of puzzled me is also when they were all they also said something that the protesters were attacking the body.
No.
Actually,
this Westboro church in this Kansas town, they're almost all lawyers, and they're all his, the minister,
Bizarre.
Philip Phelps family. I can't think of his first name. This
Fred.
Reverend
Fred Phelps.
Reverend Fred Phelps family and grandchildren and grandchildren.
It's
and
kind of
nieces.
A cult. It's really kind of a cult.
Yeah, and they've just gained this incredible public attention from their absolutely obnoxious picketing of funerals.
You're right. They are very nasty people, and I wouldn't put them past something like that. But I haven't heard anything like that.
No,
they've gotten too close for comfort. They shouldn't even be there. But
in this case, it was settled by the Supreme Court that 8-1 overturned this awarding of a judgment
to the father of a slain Marine that was being picketed by this Westboro church, saying that we're suffering these casualties because we're allowing homosexuality. I think these people got a problem. But anyway.
Yeah, they do.
They said that they were that there's all right to have laws. This was you had to be at least 1,000 feet away from a funeral, and they were quiet and they cooperated with the police.
Yeah.
And they didn't cause any commotion.
The police were going to take their butts to jail.
Yeah, they'd sure love to do it. And what happened too? It's really created an outpouring of support in periods where or in places where they're going to come to picket, because very often the whole community turns out to support or
protect.
There's
a picket for the picket.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, and I'm so glad that you're paying attention. Way to
Thanks,
go.
Thanks, Tyler.
Thanks, Tyler.
Appreciate it. And here's Debbie in Mount Clemens. Hi, Debbie. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to make two comments. One about Kid Rock and the union. And with Kid Rock, everybody's complaining about the Confederate flag. When the NAACP was created for black people, how come a black person is not being honored for the great work that has been done in Detroit?
Well, they may have a number of those awards. I don't think he's the sole recipient.
It's not limited to
people of color. They've always, the NAACP, for a long time, always had, I don't know, was it an executive director or something like that? Or a president. I think the president, in fact, was begun 1908 or something like that. And for years, almost into the 50s, they always had a white president. Because just like, it was pretty impossible for black slaves to do much.
Anything in power.
Anything, but it was whites, of course, who always led the abolitionist movement up till the Civil War. And as we know, whites have always been involved in the civil rights movement, were killed. You think about Goodman and Schwerner and other people that were, killed by white racists and called race traitors. In fact, there's even a publication called Race Traitor.
Really?
That's pro-civil rights. But no, that's not unusual for a white person to get it. And that's good. I mean, it's a number of good things about the NAACP.
Well,
and that's one of them.
Kid
All right, thanks, Debbie.
Deserves a lot of accolades for everything he's done. I mean, think of the different things that he's saved, even things that involve just entertainment because the people of Detroit need it so badly. Like he gave 20 grand to Arts, Beats, and Eats. They named a stage after him, and there we're all having a great time, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right, 313-298-WRIF. Here's Don in Port Huron. Hi, Don. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
We're good.
Great, thank you.
I just want to say, I think Kid Rock's getting kind of a bad rap here. The NAACP has chosen to honor him for what he's done for the city of Detroit.
And they're standing by it.
Okay, very good.
And they're defending him. Yeah,
they're defending him.
Yes, I'm defending him, too. I think Kid Rock's done a lot of good things for the
We all agree on that.
We've been saying that for an hour and a half.
We're only saying that he ought to park this symbol that at best is misunderstood. And that's the best you can get. And in reality, I think it represents a hideous symbol to many people. I mean, he could...
Listen, I have a compromise for him.
What?
He gets rid of the flag and he just puts more half-naked babes up there.
There you go.
Come on. You guys can't argue with that,
What do you think, Don?
What do you think?
Outstanding idea.
More strippers.
I sit back and I see Eminem getting accolades over the stupid Chrysler commercial. The guy is a homophobe. I'm not gay, but I'll tell you what. He represents a very negative viewpoint when it comes to different...
I think he worked that whole thing out years ago with his buddy Elton John. I think he's come a long way with that one.
Yeah, I mean,
there was a ripple effect, and I'm glad it did happen. I'm glad he was called out, I mean, really. But maybe this is kind of Kid Rock's own little version of that.
And, there was that classic rock song by Foreigner, Dirty White Boy.
Yeah.
I mean, they've grown out of that.
Yeah, right.
That's good.
They've taken showers. They've cleansed themselves.
Thanks, Don. Appreciate it. Port Huron. Ah, love it. Here is James in Ann Arbor. James, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. I was going to make a note before when I was on the air about Hash Bash.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say a couple things. like with the fact of Adam being arrested over his possession or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just remind people, Adam Brooke, one of the organizers of the Hash Bash in Ann Arbor, has been arrested for allegedly having a pound of the weed. Okay, but go ahead.
To me, that just seems like it's another repeat of what happened with John Sinclair and why Hash Bash was started. But
well, in fairness, John Sinclair, who was the founder of
he sold a doobie to an undercover.
Well,
cop,
he had
right?
only two it joints.
Two, yeah, two joints. Right, that's a good point. John Sinclair decided, to heck with this, I'm moving to Amsterdam.
Yeah, John Sinclair was the founder of the White Panther Party, which supported the Black Panther Party, and it was
managed
also
the MC5, right?
There you go, yeah. So it's a little different, but you know what? It really doesn't matter. I mean, why in the world there are laws against marijuana is absolutely insane. I mean, talk about, I forgot about all that when I was talking about how we could eliminate the deficit. You eliminate the laws against drugs. That would be part of it. And then we wouldn't have to spend, I think someone estimated we've spent $1 trillion on
the drug war.
The drug war. I didn't say it tonight. War on drugs. Man, I can't even drive on drugs.
Yeah, well, we
heard that before.
I've heard that. I've heard a few of your sayings before, Peter. But, you know, Peter and I did experiment way back when. It was a success.
It was a success.
We've moved on. We're supporting
the harder drugs.
No, no, now it's gin and tonics.
Yeah, I was going to say the drug of now we're on to the drug of despair. Alcohol.
Right. Little vodka.
All right. Thank you. Oh, man, there is such, you know, I don't think I should even say this.
Maybe then go with your instinct.
Okay.
Check with me at the break.
It's not dirty. That's usually what people are concerned about. But I don't think I want to advocate any particular brand of booze, do I?
Oh, why not?
All right. No, this is, well, I'll just announce that there is this boutique vodka made inside Detroit called Valentine's with a V.
I've heard of it. Really?
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Whoa. We're back. That's it?
Peter.
What? Did I do something wrong?
No.
Let's try another one.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
We know you love to save money. That's why we know you'll love MotorCityDailyDeal.com. Each weekday, MotorCityDailyDeal.com sends an unbelievable deal right to your inbox. We're working with local businesses to make sure these deals save you 50 to 85% off. Restaurants, salons, spas, events, and more. You get incredible deals from great local businesses like these.
Chief Charlie's Restaurant and Saloon in Fort Gratiot. American Pet Resort in Roseville. Massages by Stephanie in Allen Park, Jason J. Armstrong, DDS, PC in Dearborn, and Anytime Fitness in Commerce.
And these deals are so good, they're only available for 24 hours. That's right, just 24 hours, then they're gone. MotorCityDailyDeal.com. It's your new local way to save on all the cool things you love to eat, see, and do. Log on, sign up, and save with MotorCityDailyDeal.com. That's MotorCityDailyDeal.com. MotorCityDailyDeal.com.
Why do we go through so much hassle for our morning coffee? We make it, wait in line for it, fuss with cream and sugar. There has to be a faster and easier way to shake the morning buzz. There is. 5-Hour Energy. It's ready right now. No making, waiting, or fussing required. And it really works. Just open it up, knock it back, you're done in seconds. Now that's fast and easy. 5-Hour Energy. The no wait, no hassle way to a great morning. Try it today.
Individual results may vary. See 5hourenergy.com for more details.
Now's the time.
Now's the time to make a difference.
Now's the time to do what's right.
To help a family.
Now's the time to volunteer.
To make a commitment.
To make new friends.
To make dreams come true.
To help a child.
Now's the time to help Habitat for Humanity build hope and change lives with a family in your community or around the world.
Now's the time.
Now, more than ever, help build it.
Visit Habitat.org.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar.
Burglars prefer to break in when they think no one is home and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Pick up your phone now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alerts, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-877-653-8844. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-877-653-8844. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and protect your home license numbers. Call now, 1-877-653-8844. That's 1-877-653-8844.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome to our final segment. So if you want to join us, grab that phone number. And remember, 1 a.m., Arabs Gone Wild. Dean Obadallah is going to be with us. They're doing the Arabs Gone Wild Revolution Tour comedy show coming into Dearborn on March 20th. And John McMillan, Smoking Typewriters, the 60s underground press and the rise of alternative media in America. If you can imagine this, there was a time when there was no internet, no Twitter, no Facebook. Do you want to be on the air?
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you. Do you will not silence me, Peter. Where we, yeah, there was a time we did radio without the internet. How did we ever do that? Wow, we really had to think about things, didn't we? A lot more.
You know, here, by the way, is I forgot I should have read this earlier. This is from Brian, who wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And I have seen and heard this joke. We heard it last week.
Yeah.
It's worth repeating. Here's the deal. A dozen cookies are placed in front of a corporate CEO, a teabagger, and a union worker. The CEO takes 11 cookies and tells the teabagger, the union worker is trying to take the last one. Or I've heard it a lot of different ways. I like it better, Brian. It says the teabagger, the billionaire tells the teabagger, the union worker is trying to take your cookie.
Yeah. For real.
Yeah.
Scott wrote in at calltalkyes@yahoo.com from Jackson, Michigan. He said he'd like to comment on the swastika versus the stars and bars. And you kind of alluded to this earlier, Peter. The swastika existed for thousands of years before being hijacked by the Nazis to serve as their symbol. And the stars and bars, on the other hand, has only existed as a symbol of racism.
And more, actually, even more precise, as a symbol of slavery. I mean, that's what the Civil War was about and only what it was about. The preservation of slavery. In fact, you can go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, PeterWerbe.com. And somewhere down in that middle column, there is a link to, it's called, I think, Five Myths About the Civil War. And it's trying to put lipstick on a pig. I mean, the idea that it was about states' rights. Yeah, it was about states' rights, the right of states to have slaves. That's what it was all about. Well, let's see. Let's go down south and pick up John in Winnsboro, Louisiana.
Wow.
John, hi. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Well, I've been raised down there. My grandparents, they've all been in the Ku Klux Klan and everything. And I've read my history books and everything, but the Confederate flag stands for the 13 colonies of the South. Now, you know, the racism part and everything, I don't see it in there, you know, really, but the Ku Klux Klan flag is a real racist flag. It's crosses and just red stripes on it.
Yeah, but it was
in fact, that wasn't even
the national flag of the Confederacy. It's the battle flag, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
And it is, I mean.
And what was the war about? What was that about?
Why were about slavery.
There you go.
Correct.
So here's what we're saying, John, and maybe you can answer this. If it's offensive to people and brings up such memories
and pain,
and it happened, 150 years ago now or something like that, do you think people ought to just retire it?
Well, I mean, it,
You can't tell that to the old timers.
Okay. Well, fortunately, we have a brand new generation. John, how did you find this program?
Well, I'm a truck driver, and I'm in Michigan, and I now live in Michigan.
Oh, okay. So you're not calling from Winsboro, Louisiana.
You're up north now.
No, but it's still on, you know.
All right. Well, welcome to the north, and welcome to
another way of looking at things.
Yeah. Thank you very much. By the way, my great great grandfather, Red Bigham, who fought with the Michigan, I can't remember what it was, some or other volunteers. There is a special cemetery out in Woodmere Cemetery on Fort Street. The section is called the GAR, which is the Grand Army of the Republic, and so his gravesite is out there.
Is it really?
Yeah. I mean, he didn't get killed.
You go visit?
I have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually.
Old Red Bingham.
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting. It's not Bingham. It's Bigham. B-I-G.
Bigham.
Yeah, like bigot. And that's on my maternal. What would he say? My paternal grandparents' side. Yeah.
Okay.
My father's, my grandmother's, I don't know, I can't figure that stuff. Anyway, let's see. Here is Scott in Westland. Hi, Scott. You're on the air.
Well, hi, Pete. Hi, Jalene. And again, Pete, happy 40th anniversary there at WRAF. I mentioned that to Jalene a couple weeks ago.
You left me on your anniversary, Peter.
The station has been rocking for 40 years.
Yes, it has. And we're going to celebrate for the whole year.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I had some serious things to talk about, but I can't resist. Among other things, Pete, a porn extra is called a teabagger.
But, that was pretty good, Scott.
Now, wait a minute. We should tell people.
That's only if they agree on that particular.
Yeah, well, wait a minute. I want to get back, but I just want to set it. We were talking about porn stars, and, you know, well, how come nobody's a porn extra? Now, are you making that up, or is that a little joke?
Well, no, actually, that's from Larry David's Curb Your Enthusiasm, or that's how I'm aware of the slang term. And, of course, again, I'm a fan of Bill Maher. Bill Maher, you know, makes that joke a lot in various forms.
That's great.
But it is true. It's that's in the porn industry, that's slang for someone who performs a certain function, which I'm not going to get into right now. But seriously, folks. The two things I wanted to talk about were the conservative tax boycott and maybe the Westboro decision, if I can get to that.
Just do the tax boycott. What's up?
Okay. There's a subtext to this conservative war on taxes and the underfunding of the government. And basically what it is a tax boycott. Now, that's not necessarily a left or a right thing. And I think the best way to explain it is back in the Vietnam War, a lot of people decided the Vietnam War was, you know, wrong and evil. And so, being U.S. citizens who pay taxes, they tried to withhold either the part of their tax that they felt was going to the Vietnam War.
Right.
Or they would withhold their taxes altogether. It was a form of protest that I wouldn't recommend personally, because very often the IRS caught up with them, and a lot of these people went to prison. Not saying that, you know, what they were doing was wrong. But see, that is actually what I think why these wealthy conservatives, it's not that they're not charitable, and many of them are, and a lot of really wealthy people like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett are very generous people.
You know who is very charitable? David Koch. The Koch brothers that are the paymasters of the Tea Party. And the teabaggers who belong to the Tea Party.
Yeah, but to who?
And, well, let me tell you, he just gave $100 million to a cancer center. When I was staying at the Empire Hotel across from Lincoln Center in New York, and there's the Koch, the David Koch Center for the Performing Arts. So besides, you know.
Well, he's got to do some good. He's got to show people that he's doing things other than the evil work that he's doing.
He wants to get all these laws against regulation repealed so his energy companies can pollute as much
that's
as they
right.
want.
And, freely.
And he can buy up all these Wisconsin utilities under the Governor Walker's plan
mm-hmm.
and all that. But, no, I mean, he had prostate cancer, so I suspect that, or has it, I don't know which, I would suspect that is genuine, and his love
cancer
of the arts.
Cancer doesn't choose which political affiliation.
And you can, love the performing arts and still be a right winger. Right?
You can. You can. My dad, he's a musician, and he's a Republican.
Yeah. Well, there's a few.
But he's not that evil.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Dustin. Dustin's in Utica. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
We're good.
Yeah, I just had a comment about the whole thing with the Confederate flag and Kid Rock. I think more for Kid Rock now, it's more of a marketing thing than anything else. Because if you look at the way his music's changed and his fan base has changed, it's more, his big hit song was using Sweet Home Alabama and stuff like that. And it alludes to a bigger thing where, I think a lot of people follow symbols and ideals that, they don't fully, understand or, realize that they're following. And it's if people had more consciousness of what they were actually, endorsing or following, I think we'd all have a little more peaceful understanding of who we all are.
Right. That's a great point, isn't it, Peter?
And it is. And what a nice phrase, a peaceful understanding. Whoa.
Yeah. Hey, nothing crazy about that.
Yeah. I think I'm going to copyright that now. So.
Yeah, get on it.
All right, Dustin, thank you.
Thank you, man.
All right, bye. In terms of what Scott from Westland was just talking about, the idea of low taxes never really works for us. I mean, for one thing, really wealthy people, they got everything they want anyway. We need to pay taxes in order to finance our schools and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Chuck Collins, who I've interviewed before, who's a senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies, he says, he wrote a piece called Pay Up, Corporate Tax Dodgers.
Yeah.
I like that. He says, instead of cutting state and federal budgets, the United States should crack down on the corporate tax dodgers thumbing their noses at us. Are you ready for that? I mean, you're thinking, we all got to pitch in and cut something. Go to my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com, and there's, you see a demonstration where these people in England are holding a big sign that says tax dodger, and they're going to all these banks. And they're also now, and the group is called Uncut. And I think if you go, let me see, it's U.S. Uncut. And so if you go to usuncut.org, you'll get all this information. But he says, go ahead, give the phone number or something. All of a sudden I went.
We do actually have a couple of open lines, but only about 10 minutes left of the show. So
there you go. I don't know what happened. I can't wait till this winter is over.
I know.
Yeah. Across the nation, states are making deep cuts that will wreck the quality of life for everyone. To close budget gaps that total more than $100 billion. But there's a more sensible option, says Chuck Collins. Overseas tax havens enable companies to pretend their profits are earned in other countries like the Cayman Islands. Simply making that ruse illegal would bring home an estimated $100 billion a year. So we'd have all of that. These corporations are heavy users of our taxpayer-funded public infrastructure and property rights protection systems. In other words, they make out by what we provide for public use. They use our regulated marketplace, call upon our law enforcement system and judiciary to remedy disputes. They're protected by U.S. police forces and firefighters. They enjoy all the privileges and benefits of tax-paying citizens. They just don't pay their fair share of corporate taxes. And I was saying earlier about all these things that could be done. I don't know. I should have asked. Did anybody disagree with them? I don't even have them all in front of me. But, it's things that we could easily raise all of this money for. And the main thing is tax the rich. They're making enough money. It wouldn't hurt them. Anything that's going to happen to the average person, whether it's a middle-class person, that it is just going to have to pay, when you're retired, pay taxes on your pension the way Governor Snyder wants, talking about cutting back on money for schools, all of this stuff, infrastructure, paying people less, all of that is going to hurt the average person.
They're on the wrong end of everything. Yeah. It's just ridiculous.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. The wrong end. Start at the top.
Go to the other end.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. We got about 15 minutes left. Let's go through these calls. Here is Jason. Jason's in Royal Oak. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Julian.
Hi.
Hi, Jason.
Thanks. I guess just sorry to get back to topic that caller before me just talked about, but I was thinking, with people like Kid Rock, it's mostly like a Lynyrd Skynyrd Southern rock kind of a thing. But what bothers me is when you see the Confederate flag put in front of a government building or on a state flag. I find that to be pretty creepy. So
yeah, sure.
Yeah, just want to say that.
It is creepy.
Well, and these southern...
Really creepy.
Yeah, these southern states still have that there, which is...
I mean, when I see one of those flying, I've seen a few around town, my eyes just about pop out of my head. Honestly, I just... And I'm taken aback. It's like, I gasp.
Yeah. I mean, like I say, it's pretty thoughtless. And it's also contentious. I mean, one of the things... Oh, man, what was the phrase the guy... Used the god.
If I were black, I would be like flipping them off.
No. But what did that the one caller said he wanted to copyright? Thoughtful something or other. Do you remember what that was? We forgot it.
So long ago.
Yeah, it was so long. It must have been at least
20 minutes.
5 minutes ago. Jason, thanks for that. Appreciate it very much. So here is Tommy. Tommy's in Chesterfield. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, how are you?
Awesome. Hey, listen, I figured I'd just be the brave one here, whatever. But as far as Kid Rock goes, you know, he's an awesome guy. If he was a racist, I think he would have made it evident.
We don't believe he's a racist. We really don't.
Right, right.
We think that he's...
Saying, you know, he flies the flag, whatever. No big deal. It's just a symbol of, you know, sticking it to the man, kind of. You know, it's a rebel flag.
Well, wait a minute.
How sticking it to the black man, that's what it's doing.
I mean, it doesn't. The man usually meant, like, if you use that parlance from
Find a different way to stick it to the man. We do it every Sunday night at 11 o'clock, and we do it without flying a Confederate flag ever. or a peace sign.
In the 1960s, the man, or sticking it to the man meant the people in power, the people that had authority over it. But again, I mean, you know, It's a battle flag that represents this hideous period in our history.
Right.
I mean, what did we learn? Just 650,000 people were killed. I mean, geez. I mean, and why won't they let it go? And if they say it's heritage, what kind of heritage is that?
I gotta tell you, there's so many other things that can describe this out.
It's part of American history. Yeah. It's something that happened in American history.
Yeah. But it's something that
There's a lot that happened in American history. People
should be ashamed of that, though. I mean, they were traitors to the United States. They precipitated this war that wound up with, more people died, more Americans died in the Civil War than all the rest of the wars combined, including, I think what I was thinking about earlier when I had a low ball estimate, I think it was 425,000 people that died in soldiers that died in World War II. The combined total is more than that. So it's such an ugly period. And then the period after Reconstruction and when the Ku Klux Klan then, you know, installed segregation and the kind of violence and all that, it's really terrible. And it's like I say, it is confrontational. It is in people's face. And we ought to just, you know, relax.
Keep it in the museum.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate
your
call.
Put it in the Museum of Racism.
Here's Joe and Warren. Joe, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, hi, guys. How you doing?
Hey, good.
Hey, I'm from Tennessee. Half my family's from Michigan, so I'm up here for a little while.
Right on.
Now, listen, I'm an old historian. I got to tell you a little quick story. The South was going to succeed from the Union. It was a war between the states. Lincoln did not want the South to succeed. The South was buying all their goods cheaper from France and England than they could from up here in the north.
But what they really wanted was to be able to keep the slaves.
No. They got PO'd. The north got mad because the south was going to succeed. Lincoln got mad. He didn't want the south to succeed.
Well, it wasn't a matter. I mean, it's not an individual, like, anger. I mean, the idea was that they were going to split the nation because they wanted to maintain the basis of their economy was based on slaves.
Slave labor.
Yeah. I mean, here, I'm just reading this now. In 1860, delegates of the South Carolina Secession Convention adopted a quote, declaration of the immediate causes which induced and justified the secession of South Carolina from the Federal Union, close quote. It noted an increasing hostility on the part of the non-slave holding states to the institution of slavery and protested the northern states had failed to, quote, fulfill their constitutional obligations by interfering with the return of fugitive slaves to bondage. Slavery, not states' rights, birthed that war. And, you know, at the root of it, there was economic things, but the economy was based around slavery. And the fact that the South had an economy that necessitated holding hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people as property. All right. I got to go real quickly because if I'm going to get people in, you know what I can do? Can I? Here's Theo in Detroit. Theo, everybody gets about one or two sentences. Can you do it for me?
Okay. The NAACP award to Kid Rock is a publicity stunt. Kid Rock has committed assault against a man in Atlanta, Georgia. He was convicted. He also has been charged with domestic violence. And to be a role model and award him is taking the lowest denominator. That's on the Internet, by the way.
Okay. Thank you, Theo. Appreciated that. Adam Brooke, by the way, called to say thank you for us talking about these charges that have been filed against him. Adam Brooke, the organizer of Hash Bash, and he's been arrested for possessing more than a pound of marijuana.
He emailed as well and said, Hash Bash this year, Governor Gary Johnson, the former governor of Mexico, is committed to speak, and John Sinclair will be back in the States.
Okay. And we'll...
I've never been to Hash Bash.
Oh, it's great fun. Great fun.
I'm always working. Yeah.
All right. There are a few more. Let me see. How many commercials do we have here?
I think we're good.
Yeah, I think. Well, okay. We'll go. Chris in Harrison Township. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm just tuning in, and I might have not heard some of the things you said, but for the South, during that time, the United States was split into two separate entities, and the South now still has the feeling of being a separate entity. Not including Vietnam, where it was more of a withdrawal, the United States has never lost a war. Mm. For the South, they did. I mean, the whole idea for the South, their motto was sun, dirt, and slaves. Now, when the Union came down and abolished all of that, I mean, we took all their agriculture out, which was their key factor of making a living for any of them. We took out their agriculture because we were trying to get more into a manufacturing phase, which was what the Union...
No, it wasn't. It was... Yeah, I mean, it was this conflict that who was going to be the dominant power in the United States, the rising industrial class and capitalist financiers, or the slaveocracy that essentially had run the U.S. since its founding. All right, actually, with that, I'm sorry to say, Kyle and Sean, we got to go.
Call us next week.
Yeah.
But, we'll be back.
Yeah, we will. We will.
And thanks to everyone in the other room.
Yeah.
We've got Aaron, of course, who's helping out, and we have Sarah, and we have Athena. Thanks,
you
guys.
Thanks, and stay tuned. Got a couple of real interesting interviews after these.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call. Right after this.
Homeowners, the mortgage market is starting to move, but the good news is rates are still incredibly low. Don't miss this opportunity to refinance your mortgage. Call Quicken Loans at 888-249-1425. Quicken Loans is America's home loan experts, closing 1 million home loans over 25 years. And recently, J.D. Power & Associates ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction in primary mortgage origination. Find out how quick and easy it is to refinance with Quicken Loans. Call right now for a free rate quote and see how much Quicken Loans can lower your monthly payment. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425. For J.D. Power & Associates award information, visit jdpower.com. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide mortgage licensing system number 3030. That's Quicken Loans. 888-249-1425. 888-249-1425.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? Protect your home with a security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer. Call now and get $850 of hardware and activation for free. Call 1-877-653-8844. That's 1-877-653-8844. $99 installation charge. 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions and Protect Your Home license number.
This is your Travel Minute. If you're planning a flight for business or pleasure anytime soon, here's the 3-1-1 rule for carry-on luggage to ease your way through airport security lines. Rule 1. Only 3-ounce or smaller containers of liquid or gel are permitted in carry-on luggage. However, larger containers are permitted in your check-in baggage. 2. Place your 3-ounce or smaller containers into 1 1-quart size clear plastic zip-top bag. Only one bag per traveler is allowed. 3. Place the bag into the security bin with your shoes and other items as required for scanning. The rules for other personal items vary, so it's a good idea to check with your airline or travel agent before you pack for your trip.
Your Travel Minute is a public service by this station and ASTA, the American Society of Travel Agents.
WRIF and Live Nation present the RIF's 40th Anniversary Concert. Stone Temple Pilots live. April 20th at the Fillmore Detroit. Celebrate 40 years of WRIF rocking Detroit with Stone Temple Pilots. Tickets for STP are going fast. Get yours now at all Ticketmaster outlets or online at LiveNation.com. WRIF's 40th Anniversary Concert with Stone Temple Pilots. April 20th, the Fillmore Detroit. From Live Nation and 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks. 101 WRIF. And WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. You know, particularly some of you younger people listening, I got to tell you something. There was a time when there wasn't an internet, there wasn't a World Wide Web, and people communicated in different ways. I know you've heard about things called handwritten letters. And some of what we're going to talk about still remain, and those are newspapers, but feeling that those are going to be in the museum as well. But in every upsurge of what we call contestation, that is a radical upsurge of challenge to the status quo going back into the 18th century, even, but certainly when you hit the 1880s through to the 1960s, when protest movements began, they also created a vibrant newspaper culture. And these were ones that were put together by radicals, by unions, by feminists, by anti-war groups, by gay groups, you name it. There was a vibrant, what was called an underground press. The term, of course, comes from World War II and like a Nazi-occupied Europe. Well, this terrific book just came my way. It's called Smoking Typewriters, the 60s, that is in the 1960s, the 60s, Underground Press and the Rise of Alternative Media in America. Now, here in Detroit, we have the Metro Times, Real Detroit, a lot of other papers like this. But we're going to be talking specifically about the newspapers that were so prevalent during that tumultuous period of the 1960s. And joining me, the author, is John McMillan. He is assistant professor of history at Georgia State University. He's co-editor of The Radical Reader, a documentary history of an American radical tradition. Also, The New Left Revisited, Protest Nation, The Radical Roots of Modern America, and The 60s, a journal of history, politics, and culture. He lives in Athens, Georgia, but we're reaching him in Boston. John McMillan, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here. I live in Atlanta, actually, just for a point of clarification.
Okay. Well, you know what? I must have been thinking of REM.
People get Georgia State and University.
Yeah, it says Atlanta right here. I read.
Yeah, it's all right.
I read Athens. No matter. Hey, I should. It seems like every time that I do an interview lately, I have to give a full disclosure statement. I should say that I am quoted in this book by John McMillan, Smoking Typewriters, and because of my work with a newspaper called The Fifth Estate, published here in Detroit for years and years. Actually, right now in its, let me see, do the math, 46th year of publication, longest running publication of that nature. Am I right on that? Is my history good enough?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. The Fifth Estate is, I guess, the only continuing underground newspaper from the 60s. I haven't kept up with it, and I understand it's changed a lot, but I guess you've been running continuously since 1965, wasn't
it? That's right.
Yeah.
So there's my full disclosure. So I'm very happy to see this book, and although our goal was to end history, we are now history. And John McMillan, so you, I'm looking at your photo, so you couldn't have been too old during that period of the 1960s. Tell us, what's the fascination here of, you know, every historian has to focus on some area. Why this?
Well, I was born in 1970, so I missed out on the 60s.
Okay.
I grew up in a small town in Michigan, And I had kind of like a layperson's interest in the culture of the era. I loved the Beatles at a very early age, and I knew who Abbie Hoffman was, you know, by the time I was in ninth grade, and no one else in my school did. And so Charles, as weird as it sounds, Charles Manson, I was, interested in him. But I didn't know that it was going to be a vocation, or I didn't think it would be a scholarly pursuit until I got to graduate school. And I was planned on studying antebellum race relations, but I saw that there was a new generation of people, just a little bit older than myself, who were the first generation of people to write about the 60s without having participated in that, in those events. And so there was a kind of revisionist movement that was underway, and a lot of these people are my friends, and suddenly it dawned on me that this is what I could do.
It's interesting you use that phrase, revisionist history, because there's sort of a counter-revisionist history that says, contrary to what so many people have said, to essentially romanticize that period of protest and revolt, that it was actually very awful. And some people on the right say that you can draw a line between the challenges to American institutions and everything that's gone wrong since.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, Bill Clinton said something that I think was shrewd on this point once. He said, if you look back at if you look back at the 60s and you think that there was more harm done than good, then you're probably a conservative or a Republican. If you think that on balance there was more good than bad from the 60s, you're probably a liberal or a Democrat. And I think that, that seems to hold true. And in my experience, even in the last, presidential election, I was astonished to see the cultural politics of the 60s playing such a big role. And so, it's still fundamentally important.
John McMillan is my guest. Oxford University Press has published his Smoking Typewriters, the 60s Underground Press and the Rise of the Alternative Media in America. Give us a scope, and this is tough, isn't it? To really get a handle on how many newspapers there were and the circulation. We always floated a quite large figure. I'm going to let you go at it, and then I'll see if I'm exaggerating or not.
Well, it's hard to say precisely how many papers there were at any one time and what the circulation was, but someone has figured out that the underground press of the 60s does in fact represent one of the most aggressive and spontaneous growths in the history of publishing. And with the Fifth Estate that you were involved with, I think you in 1965, I believe there were five papers,
right?
And maybe six in 1966, and then by the end of 1966 and 1967, in every campus and community across the country, papers started appearing. And by the end of the 60s, we had 300 or 400 or 500 papers, with a combined circulation that stretched into the millions easily, and so it was a pretty spectacular growth.
Yeah, that's actually interesting. And I like it that you didn't actually put a figure on it. And I don't even know that it's important, because they had an impact. That there was a Black Panther Party slogan, mm-hmm. that said, I think Huey Newton said it, that power is the ability to define phenomena. Or if you could get rid of that word, you'd say power is the ability to define reality. And here in Detroit, I mean, did you read if there was a demonstration, say, against George Wallace, the Southern racist who ran for president in 1968? Did you read the Detroit News account of the demonstration there, which was called a riot? Or did you read the Fifth Estate account that said that there was this police assault by these pro-Wallace white Detroit police officers who did incredible harm and damage and with intense brutality to the demonstrators? So it was essentially right? I mean, whose reality is it?
Well, I mean, I think that the underground press writers were honest about their subjectivity and their bias. They didn't try to be neutral or fair or even-handed or whatnot. They acknowledged where they were coming from. But the thing that, drew that made them frustrated was that the mainstream press, the agenda-setting papers like the New York Times or the Washington Post, sort of refused to own up to their own bias as well. And they had a bias in favor of, I guess, what you would call mainstream or center values. But they claim this mantle of objectivity. And so, you mentioned the George Wallace issue. I don't go into that particular episode, but there's lots of times in the book where I will compare the reports of, mainstream papers with the writing that was done by underground, radical journalists. And I do think there are quite a few times when the amateur radicals, outperform the salaried professional journalists. That did happen.
Well, if you were as a historian and you were looking at a particular incident and you saw conflicting accounts, would it depend on your particular point of view or the prejudice, as you said earlier, that one would come into it? So here you have the Detroit News account of something that happened in 1968, and you're looking at it in 2011, and here's the underground press, the Fifth Estate, that has an alternate view. How does one determine what was reality, forgetting about what is reality?
No, I mean, that's a great question. You just have to look at, a wider range of primary source material and use your instincts and training as a historian to figure out, what account is more likely to be more accurate. I begin the book by talking about a Rolling Stones concert at Altamont that was very infamous, and this is the show where the Hells Angels did security and a person died, and by every single account, people who were there remember it as a frightening experience. It was something that was it was a disaster for the counterculture, and if anyone has seen the film Gimme Shelter, they know what I'm talking about. And the underground press,
the documentary,
it's a documentary, right? And the underground press sort of described it in these terms. But then if you look at the San Francisco Examiner, which is the flagship paper of the whole Hearst newspaper, enterprise. I mean, initially they described this concert with a kind of like Woodstock style sentimentalism. They, specifically reported there was no violence. They botched their coverage, and then, later on realized it had been a disaster for the counterculture, but their tone was so priggish and excoriating that it's very hard to imagine any younger readers, taking them seriously. And they were just, the mainstream press was just incredibly dismissive of, the Rolling Stones, and why would anyone want to attend a concert with them, because it was just very disparaging. And younger underground journalists not only, got the better sense of what happened there, but they also claimed for themselves a kind of epistemic privilege. It was an idea that by being deeply implicated in the rock and protest culture, you can better understand what's happening there. And then the mainstream journalists were just too far removed to sort of accurately represent their worldview.
The book is Smoking Typewriters, The 60s Underground Press and the Rise of Alternative Media in America by John McMillan. There's so many, that's why people write books. Sometimes I think, how can I get this all in 25 minutes? And then I realize you can't. You got to go to the book. There'll be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, Werbe.com, PeterWerbe.com. John's last name is MC, capital MILLIAN, and that's johnmcmillan.com. There'll be a link there as well. Give us an idea. We've only talked about the Fifth Estate here in Detroit. There was also one of the first papers was a newspaper that simply called itself The Paper from East Lansing. But either the names themselves are interesting, or people may have heard of some of the more prominent underground papers of the 1960s. What were they?
Well, the Los Angeles Free Press, sometimes nicknamed the Freep, is generally considered the first paper, and that was in 64. And then the Berkeley Barb was pretty famous and had these papers had substantial readerships, in the hundreds of thousands, at their peak. The East Village Other was a big paper in New York. And that paper you mentioned that was simply called The Paper, that was the first campus underground newspaper, and it was kind of neat for me to write about because I went to Michigan State I was an undergraduate there, and I don't know where I'm going with this.
We were talking about other papers. What was in Atlanta where you live? There was
the great speckled bird.
Yeah.
So
the Kaleidoscope in Milwaukee, uh-huh. The Seed mm-hmm. in Chicago, mm-hmm. and is there a common thread, or do they each have a sort of a unique quality to them?
Yeah. Well, that's a great question. I think it's a bit of both. I mean, each paper, I think, fundamentally, these are community newspapers, and so they were distinctive in the sense that they reflected what was happening in their communities, and they reflected the sensibilities of the people who ran them and, put them together. But there were these organizations that you know about, called Liberation News Service and the Underground Press Syndicate, and they were ways, without going into a lot of detail, that the ways of nationalizing content. So if you were in the Fifth Estate, for instance, in Detroit, you probably didn't have a budget to send someone off to, you know, New York City to cover the to uprising at Columbia when there was a big protest there. But a group like Liberation News Service could send out, you know, its reports to all of the underground papers. And then for a small fee, you probably got their articles, and then you could give, you know, you could provide news accounts of something that was happening very far away from Detroit. And so lots of underground papers were interconnected in that way.
Yeah, and also Liberation News Service being its politics being leftist or new leftist, as they were called then, sent people to Vietnam and Cuba and Latin America, Africa, a lot of reports from Europe. So there was essentially this, what was like the Associated Press, was able to provide sometimes twice weekly packets, including photographs as well. So the quality of many of the papers began to rival those of the mainstream press that were pretty dull affairs, both content and visually.
Mm-hmm.
And speak a little about the visual content as well. I think that's pretty important.
I don't write about this as much in the book. My concerns are, or my interest is on how these underground papers sort of, you know, contributed to the growth and the cultural logic of the new left and the counterculture. But, you know, they had in the 60s, you saw the advent of photo offset printing. So basically whatever you wanted to put onto a backing sheet, whether it was, you know, newsprint or pictures or collages or anything else, you would take a picture of it and then it would be reproduced exactly the way it was set. And so, you know, and then also people experimented with what was called split fountain printing techniques. And you could get these beautiful kind of rainbow splash, you know, psychedelic flavored papers, you know, no two of which were ever 100% exactly alike. And a lot of the graphic, you know, design that we associate with the 60s came out of the underground press. There's also these underground comics, and a lot of people probably know Robert Crumb or whatnot. You know, a lot of these writers also emerged from the underground papers.
And some of the artists that also did the concert posters, like Gary Grimshaw and Carl Lundgren, who did back covers for the Fifth Estate with that psychedelic art quality. So there was this merging of sort of psychedelia and left radical politics. Was it always comfortable within the papers, or was there tension?
Yeah. Well, that's a great question. I think historians always kind of have wanted to make a distinction between the, you know, the hippies who were sort of ascetic in their radicalism and they were, you know, interested in dropping out, you know, and then the politicos who were the people who were trying to, you know, organize people and build support and make, you know, political reforms. And there are some papers that reflected those divisions. There are some papers that were heavy into, you know, LSD and being groovy, and some papers that were very left-wing militant. But most papers, I think, especially by the late 60s, sort of combined, they had some elements of both of these styles of radicalism. They were both cultural and political. And so I think that, you know, if you study the 60s through the prism of these papers, you get a better sense of the degree to which these two tendencies were intertwined than I think, you know, other historians have suggested thus far.
Some nice photographs in John McMillan's Smoking Typewriters, the 60s underground press and the rise of alternative media in America. A shot of James Gurley, who was the guitarist for Big Brother and the Holding Company, Janis Joplin's group, reading the Ann Arbor Sun in 1968.
Yeah.
And then a picture of John Sinclair himself, handcuffed, giving the peace sign, one of the many times that he and the MC5 were arrested for their famous song, Kick Out the Jams, which began with this.
Which we can't say on the
even
air.
Today, we can at least, I don't know, we wouldn't get arrested. I would get fired and the station would lose its license, but that's all. John McMillan is my guest. Smoking Typewriters from the Oxford University Press is my guest. We're starting to run. Well, we do have some time, but I want to connect this up with today's alternative press. Most of the, if my memory serves me, most of the underground press of the 1960s were sold. I mean, they weren't giveaways, or as they're called in the trade, sometimes throwaways. People had to pay for them, and they also set the style. And I wonder if you could talk about the influence that the underground press had on the what we call the alternative weekly press today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the underground press, I mean, the people who ran these underground papers, you know, professed to have no interest in really making money. But, you know, after these underground papers began to fade away, we saw as a sort of second-generation alternative press. And then these are the free papers that are distributed, you know, in vending boxes, you know, in cities, you know, all across the country. And these are commercially oriented, but still usually left-wing and maybe muckraking in their approach. But they also present, you've got the Metro Times in Detroit now.
Yes.
You know, they have listings that tell you what's going on around campus. They were very, or not around the city rather. You know, concerts and whatnot. They were very profitable for a while. I think they're losing a little bit of their, with the advent of Craigslist and social networking sites and dating websites and whatnot, they're having a rough time just like lots of people in the print media. But they, they were appealing to this coveted, you know, 18 to 34, demographic and they had quite a run.
Well, today, if somebody wants to find out what's happening this coming weekend in Detroit, the whole Detroit area, of course, the colds have got us all, don't they? That you can go to the Metro Times, Real Detroit, any number of other papers, but you can also go to the mainstream papers, Detroit Free Press, Detroit News, and they'll have a very hip and splashy calendar. And
that's right.
None of them had calendars. They would announce Detroit Symphony Orchestra or that Lawrence Welk or somebody was coming to town. But when the underground press, like here in Detroit, when the Fifth Estate, they would have, you know, poetry readings, anti-war demonstrations,
right,
stuff like that. People said, wow, this is an underground culture that's only barely underground because it had a pretty widespread expression. So the underground press actually influenced the mainstream press as well, right?
Sure. I think you said it very well. I mean, they sort of stumbled on a formula that could be commercialized, I suppose. And you know, the alternative press, I'm a big fan. And I live in Atlanta. And, you know, the Creative Loafing is the paper that we have there. And as you suggest, it's the place that you can go to, you know, figure out what's going on around town.
You're not very hopeful about print media at all, are you?
I mean, the thing is, I love it. I mean, I read a daily newspaper. It's part of my news diet. And when I used to live in New York in the 90s, the New York Press was a paper that I used to rush out on Tuesday nights to get it from the vending boxes downtown because they didn't come to my uptown location till Wednesday morning, so I get the Voice in the New York Press. I used to love these papers, but I think they're having a tough time economically, and there's been such an explosion of new voices that you know, the barriers or gateways to journalism have been, you know, abolished. And so I do worry about, you know, the future of, you know, newspapers on newsprint. I'll be one of the last people to, you know, I'll keep buying them until, for as long as I have them, but I don't know how much longer we're going to have.
Well, it seems real 20th century to want to affirm printed newspapers when all of it is right there and you can keep clicking on the New York Times, nytimes.com, and you can get like every 20-minute updates. But
yeah,
this may be of interest to you. I'm going to give a workshop in Ann Arbor at an organizing conference on the value of print media in organizing efforts.
Okay.
And it seems counterintuitive because what's the good thing about having information that organizers might have for any particular campaign or political party or whatever? You can, the cost is pretty low. The cost is very high for newspapers. Newspapers are labor intensive, all this stuff. You got to distribute them. So you would think, wow, well, why don't we get rid of these babies and get electronic media? My argument is exactly the same, is that not when you have a newspaper and you're doing particularly organizing, you actually have to go around to people and say, hey, let's use the Fifth Estate as an example. You know, say you're going door to door in a community. You know, we've got a newspaper here. Here's about our campaign, like that. And then you need money for it. And people have to take money out of their pocket to subscribe or to make donations. It makes a commitment. And then you got to say, wow, we don't have enough to pay the print bill. Maybe we ought to get the MC5 or the 21st century version of it to play a benefit for us. And then that brings the community together. So Well, that's my whole argument. I don't know how I'm going to fill 45 minutes, but what do you think?
Well, good luck with that. the thing is just that I think a lot of people, you know, younger people don't find it so interesting to put, you know, images on ink on paper when there's so much they can do creatively, you know, in the electronic realm.
Yeah.
And that's just my sense. So, but if you can win some converts, you know, keep going. You've got a great run with the Fifth Estate. You know, I mean, not many papers last as long as that one. So.
It's in it, by the way. It's on, in fact, maybe people should wait because it's just about to launch a new website. It's fifthestate.org. And John McMillan has been my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. The book is a terrific account of the 60s underground press and the rise of the alternative media in America. It's and it's a great scholarship. There's about almost 90 pages of footnotes, almost all of the footnotes, which are interesting as well. So, John, I want to thank you so much. I should say people can also click onto my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com, and there will be a link to the book. And also you can go to John's website, John McMillan, that's McMillian.com. Thanks for being on the broadcast.
It's been a pleasure, and it's nice to speak with you. You know, I found some of your, you know, our material in various archives when I was doing research for this book, you know, letters that you've written to, you know, people that survived, and so it's nice to finally be in touch.
Yeah, at the beginning I gave this full disclosure. I should tell people that may have not caught it all, that I'm both quoted in the book and mentioned. So I particularly love it. And I think I wrote to you, John. I said, you're one of the few places that's ever quoted me accurately. So
I spelled your name right?
You did indeed.
Okay, so there you go.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
How do you prepare for jobs involving electronics technology, drafting and design, or information technology? Call ITT Technical Institute. Develop knowledge and skills that you could use to pursue many opportunities in promising career fields. At ITT Tech, classes meet just a few days a week, and financial aid is available for those who qualify. Call ITT Tech now for more information. 800-741-5123. That's 800-741-5123.
It's amazing how great your home looks with new carpet or flooring, especially when you get an amazing value from a company you trust. That's why you should call Sears Flooring. With Sears Flooring, you'll save 20% right now. Just call 1-888-491-3939, and Sears Flooring will bring the showroom to you. Sears has a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, or laminate to match your style and budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring for a free in-home consultation. You'll save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
These days, people of all ages, including adults, can have a perfect smile. Thanks to today's technology, people with crooked teeth may no longer need to wear metal braces. One option many adults prefer is invisible braces. Instead of the typical metal bands or brackets that are cemented to teeth, these braces are clear plastic trays. Some advantages of invisible braces are they can be removed for eating and for brushing and flossing. They are practically invisible to see, and they are less irritating to gums than traditional braces. Keep in mind that invisible braces are only available for people who need minor corrective work. If you are considering braces and would like to learn more about invisible braces, speak with your dentist. You're never too old for a beautiful smile. For the ADA Dental Minute, I'm Dr. Maria Lopez-Howell. For more information, visit our website at ada.org.
101 WRIF. Hey, this is Lars from Metallica.
Hello, this is Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Hello, this is Brian Johnson of AC/DC. You're listening to Detroit's home of rock and roll, WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Why do we go through so much hassle for our morning coffee? We make it, wait in line for it, fuss with cream and sugar. There has to be a faster and easier way to shake the morning buzz. There is. 5-Hour Energy. It's ready right now. No making, waiting, or fussing required. And it really works. Just open it up, knock it back, you're done in seconds. Now that's fast and easy. 5-Hour Energy. The no wait, no hassle way to a great morning. Try it today.
Individual results may vary. See 5hourenergy.com for more details.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Peter Werby here with you. Boy, things are getting pretty serious in the world, aren't they? All over the world. As they say, from Cairo to Madison. And oftentimes, in the midst of such serious and sometimes grim and sometimes frightening, sometimes enlightening and sometimes optimistically at the same, all at the same time, it's good to get a little humor in. And humor, my, I mean, think about how far that stretches and what the subject matter. Oftentimes, comedy is ethnic in origin. A lot of comics in the 20th century were Jewish Americans and in many ways dominated the comedy field, although, you know, not exclusively. On their Semitic cousins, the Arab people, aren't really, at least as my end of things, aren't known for great humor. In fact, stereotypes often are folks that are fairly grim. You know, we see them now, very positive image of overthrowing these despotic, tyrannical dictators. But often we think of Arab people, you know, not with humor. Well, get rid of that stereotype, folks, because it's a pleasure to welcome Dean Obadallah, and he is a comic. He is with a tour called Arabs Gone Wild Comedy Revolution Tour. It's coming to Chicago, San Francisco, San Diego, L.A., and Dearborn, Michigan. We're reaching him in New York City. Dean Obadallah, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
Well, what do you think? Is that a bad stereotype? Arabs are not very funny people?
I think that it's usually a stereotype by people don't know Arabs. I think Arabs are actually pretty funny people. They have a sense of humor, especially when you go to the region, and I think they use their sense of humor in a way as a defense mechanism or a way to deal with challenging times. So they are funny. It's just not something we see in Western media. That's all it's about.
Tell me about the title of your tour, Arabs Gone Wild Comedy Revolution. A lot of people, getting, we go back to the stereotypes, a lot of people are fearful about Arabs going wild.
Well, you know, this is playfully like Girls Going Wild, although there's no nudity at our shows. I mean, it's really a play on the Girls Gone Wild. And we had started the tour last year. It's called Arabs Gone Wild. We just named this tour, Arabs Gone Wild basically presents the Comedy Revolution Tour because of clearly the revolutions in the Middle East and tying into that. And we're trying to do our own little comedy revolution and change people's minds about Arabs, sort of what you were saying and alluding to earlier, that you know, a lot of the conceptions or misconceptions or preconceptions about Arabs, you know, comedy doesn't come to mind when you say Arab. It just doesn't. And maybe in time it will be. I mean, I'm hopefully in time democracy will be something more and more associated with the Middle East.
Sure.
Well.
Dean Obadallah, by the way, was one of the stars of the critically acclaimed Comedy Central Axis of Evil stand-up TV special. He's appeared twice on the ABC's The View, and he's been on CNN, PBS, Fox News. And he, this is interesting. You're the co-producer of the Amman Jordan Stand-Up Comedy Festival. It's the Middle East's first and only annual stand-up comedy festival, and also the annual New York Arab American Comedy Festival. So there is, as you were just saying, there is a tradition, and there's a stand-up deal in Amman Jordan, eh?
Yeah. For the last 3 years, we've done a stand-up comedy festival. It's operated by the city. They hired me because of my work producing the New York Arab American Comedy Festival, to produce a show there. And it all came out of 3 years ago. I was doing a show, a small show, 400 people in Amman. It was basically the second stand-up show ever in the kingdom. And the king, King Abdullah, came to the show and sat in the front row. And it was a little nerve-wracking, but it was fun. And after the show, he approached me with the mayor of Amman and said, would you want to be involved in helping us produce a comedy festival here? And I was, you know, the king asks you, you want to produce a comedy festival? I think the answer is always yes. So I said, of course, I'd love to. And, you know, we're friendly. I'm not going to say I'm not a buddy of King Abdullah, but he's very supportive. And the mayor of Amman, you know, very supportive. It was really their vision to do this, to try to create more of a platform for arts, for the young people there to get involved in comedy, and also to share with them comics from the West. I mean, the festival is mixed. It's not just Arab. It's not just comics of Arab heritage. In fact, this year we had Gabriel Iglesias as one of the headliners. He's Latino American, and Omid Jalili, who's Persian from the UK. And we've had Russell Peters before, who's Indian, and all different comics, all different backgrounds, religions, races, and it's really truly an international comedy festival, and hopefully it'll continue to grow, depending on what goes on in the Middle East. I mean, it's really
He could be gone. King Abdullah.
He could be. I think that really the scenario with him is more that it evolves into a constitutional monarchy, sort of like England, where the people do like him a lot. And even the opposition protests, no one's advocating that he be removed. They want more democracy, like the election of the prime minister, they already have election of parliament, but they want their prime minister elected, and they want less power with the king vested in him and more distributed to the people. So I think he would remain, if nothing else, a little bit more powerful than the Queen of England.
Mm-hmm.
But that's each country is different. I mean, they're not all the same. And it's interesting we use the term Arab world a lot. And it's really, when you travel through the Arab world, you realize there's really little similarity on the ground between the people. I mean, besides speaking Arabic, and they speak their own dialects, but it's more like Europe. You wouldn't say Europe, European world, that would never happen. I mean, the French and Italians, they border in countries, but they have different cultures. They're different types of people. It's the same way in the Arab world. The Lebanese are right next to Syria. They're much different people. I find Jordanians to be vastly different than Egyptians. And in turn, people from the Emirates and Dubai and the Gulf area are completely different people than the ones you meet more in you know, the Palestinians and Lebanese.
And what's your ethnic origin?
My dad's Palestinian. He was born in what was then Palestine, and my mom's Italian. So I'm of mixed heritage, and my mixed culture, mixed religions. I was a melting pot. My home represented America. We had, you know, a Palestinian Muslim father and a Sicilian Catholic mother. We had the two worlds coexisting fine, you know. We never had any problems. It was fun.
Dean Ubadala is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. He and two other comics, and we could talk about them in a minute, are part of the Arabs Gone Wild Comedy Revolution Tour. It's coming to Dearborn, and it's going to be at the Henry Ford Community College Auditorium on March 20th, Sunday, March 20th, two shows, 7 and 9 p.m. You know, I was thinking, am I going to put pressure on him if I say that? I was going to say, you know, you haven't said anything funny yet. But then I realized I'm a terrible straight man. I haven't given you a single setup, have I?
Well, I mean, it's the questions you were asking were more on the line of being thoughtful and conscientious than letting me be frivolous and playful. But they will emerge.
Go wild at any point. Well, here I'm just filled with serious questions. So if you can make any humor out of it, go ahead. Do you have to watch what you say? In other words, we know that there's been here in the States, in England, for instance. If you want to make fun of any religion, you can have art exhibits that ridicule the God figures and all that. We know that if you even do images of Allah, or in particularly ones that aren't done in a very friendly way, you've got guys after you. So do you have to watch what you say?
Well, there are limitations. I mean, depending where you're performing in the Middle East, it's almost the same throughout the region. They really want you to avoid any discussion of religion, not just making fun of Muslims. They tell you no jokes about Jews or Christians either. They want nothing with religion. It makes them uncomfortable, frankly. And no jokes about sex. They don't want anything dirty. They want it to be a clean show. Family-friendly show is really the focus. And in most places, you can't make fun of the leaders of the country you're performing in. You can make fun of the leaders of other countries. You can make fun of, you know, you can talk about American politics, which in the Middle East, I'll be honest, they follow more closely than the average American, because our foreign policy implicates their life a great deal. But I did a show in Lebanon where the promoter said, say whatever you want, but if you make fun of Hezbollah, you're on your own. So that was very helpful advice there. Not that I had any Hezbollah joke. I mean, not that I'm writing jokes about, you know, Nasrallah and Hezbollah, but it's not. But it was interesting there. They were a bit looser. But I think things will change. Like Egypt, you know, I've performed there several times. Last year I was there twice. If they become a true democracy and freedom of expression is protected like it is here in the States, we'll be able to make fun of whoever is the elected president. And the Egyptians have a great sense of humor, and they are really, really funny people. They will be making fun of their presidents night and day, just like we do here in the States. So I think that's kind of that's very welcoming.
Well, the great American comic Lenny Bruce and also some other Jewish comedians would toss in little Yiddish phrases in their mm-hmm. routines. When you're going to be performing on Sunday, March 20th at the Henry Ford Community College Auditorium.
No Yiddish. It won't be
no Yiddish. There you go. You made me laugh. That's great. Is the same thing? Are you going to be tossing in Arabic phrases, which is going to kind of crack everybody up?
Sure. I mean, the audience, you know, our audiences are diverse, but I will say that primarily, especially when you're in Dearborn, they're going to probably be 70%, 60, 75% of Arab heritage. But we try to make the jokes that everyone can laugh at, regardless of your background. I think the difference is if you're Arab, you relate to the jokes more. Other people will laugh at the jokes, too, but it's not something they firsthand relate to. So I think that, you know, if you want to see a different kind of comedy show, and you know, it is a family-friendly show, and hear a different point of view, that's the beauty of this show. It's not the run-of-the-mill type of show, which is about typical generic topics. It's, you know, it's our, the topics, but through our own distinct point of view. You know, if we talk about dating, it's going to be about Arab dating. If we're going to talk about, you know, the world, it's going to a lot of times be through our own Arab-American point of view. I still think the jokes are probably 90% of the material everyone can laugh at, but there's going to be some little bit of Arabic words here or there, and then we always define what it means, because everyone will laugh, and they won't know what's going on, the non-Arabs, and we explain what it means. So,
but wait a minute, give me an idea. When you said you define the Arabic word you may throw in your, can you give me an example?
Sure.
Yeah, like what?
Well, like the word inshallah, which means God willing in Arabic. Arabs use it all the time. So, and inshallah means literally God willing. And my mom's Italian would always say God willing as well. But for Arabs, God willing also means, you know, maybe and no. So I've done a joke about how I flew on Egypt Air. When you fly like in Middle Eastern Airlines, they tell you today we're flying to Egypt, you know, inshallah, which means God willing. But Arabs know that also could mean we're not flying to Egypt. So you always want to. And so Arabs will laugh at that joke about the understanding of what inshallah really means. So sometimes you have to explain it to the audience and say, this is what inshallah really means. So now you understand what's going on. It's an overused term by Arabs, but that's one of the examples here and there that they'll be in the show.
Well, and give me some pronunciation guide if I'm wrong here at all. One of your co-headliners, Maysoon Sayed, says, you don't have to be of Arab heritage to enjoy the comedy. The jokes are written for everyone to understand, even white people.
Yes. So, Maysoon Sayed, yeah. Even white people get it. Everyone gets it. I mean, that's the beauty of it. It's a lot of it has to do with family. A lot has to do with the immigrant experience, regardless of what immigrant we are. You just insert another one. I mean, it's no different. Then when you were saying, I agree 100%, like the Jewish comics in the 20s and 30s and later African-American comics and now more Latino comics are inserting their own voice into the comedy world that's already been created. And that's really what we're doing now. So you have a lot of stuff about family, about, you know, having a father who doesn't understand English well and doing jokes about, you know, bringing weird foods to school and people don't know what, you know, what shawarma is at the time, or kids have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and you have these weird exotic spices in your lunchbox, and kids wanting to trade but not trading with you. And it goes through fun stuff like that, through jokes about, you know, being in the Middle East. And, you know, I joke about how much I love cigarette smoking. And I went to a gym, and there was an ashtray on treadmill there, you know, and people literally, I'm not kidding. That's the weird part. I'm not even kidding. And that they love smoking so much. Like, we have commercials to get you to quit smoking. I joke that they're going to have commercials like, don't be a quitter. Keep smoking to the end, you know, because it's cultural, the love of cigarette smoking. You know, the same way it's weaned from us here, it's encouraged there all the time since childhood. So, you know, we deal with the two different cultures in the world, and some, you know, some people really, I think, I'm surprised how much they know about the Middle East and how much they know about Arab culture and get it, even if they're not of Arab heritage.
Well, give me an idea, just like you talk about dating while Arab. I mean, what would that mean? I mean, we...
First of all, there's no dating when you're Arab. You're not supposed to date. You're supposed to get engaged and married. There's this weird gray area where I even joke, because my girlfriend's Arab, I'll say, I have a girlfriend. I go, oh, no, I'm sorry, I'm a fiancé. And the Arabs understand. It's a subtle joke, but the idea of, you know, you meet their parents, there's much more, it's much older school than current relationships. I mean, before I had my girlfriend, I'm very happy with now, you know, it would be, you meet parents, it doesn't really matter. You don't meet someone's parents in the Arab world until much later. And Maysoon has some really great stuff because she's gotten married, but about her fiance, some really funny things about him. And for me, I mean, I tell people how, you know, loving Arab women are. Like, it's like a jacket on a winter day that keeps you warm. But if you cheat, that jacket will choke you to death, and there's no doubt about it. Because, you know, my girlfriend has made it clear. She said, if I ever cheat, Dean, I will make you food. I will not tell you. I will put poison in. I will smile. So you want the sandwich I made? I'm like, no, I want nothing. I want no food from you whatsoever. So, you know, you deal with it. It's just a slightly different world. It's the old world in a new world at the same time, that kind of tension between the two. You know, no different than other immigrant groups. That's the, you know, I tell people it's just like any other immigrant comedy show.
You know, it's interesting. I just got an email from someone I knew who sent me this hysterical message that they were about to declare Sharia law in Minnesota, right? Of all places. And I wrote him back. I said, you know, this country, we got the Statue of Liberty that says welcome people from other lands, and of course it's rarely ever been like that. But whereas, you know, they eat strange food and they dress differently and they do all that. And meanwhile, the kids are listening to the Black Eyed Peas.
Of course.
Right? So what is this tension in immigrant communities?
There is. There's the two worlds. Every young person, you know, who's born here, who has an immigrant parent, there are the two worlds between the two. And you know, I don't know of any Muslim mainstream groups calling for Sharia law. The only people talking about Sharia law are people on the right who created this fantasy to demonize Muslims. I mean, frankly, there's no American Muslims calling for Sharia law in America. Not one group, nothing. You know, it's a made-up boogeyman. But, I mean, sadly, people need the boogeyman. If it was communists for a while and, you know, whoever it might be. And that's... But that's the struggle. And, you know, we do comedy, try to be funny and have a good time and show people a different side. You know, like, our experiences are no different than Italian-American, you know, Jewish immigrants when they came over, Greek immigrants, the idea of family being really important, food being really important. You know, you can't have an Arab dinner. It's not dinner. It's like a marathon. You're like a hostage when you come over to some Arab's house for dinner because it goes for hours and hours and hours. And you know, that's the world we live in.
You know, it's interesting that in the 1890s, whereas now the Jewish stereotype are very educated people in the professions and what have you, tend to be middle class and above. And in the 1890s, the police chief of the city of Detroit said Jews were genetically predisposed to crime.
Wow.
So, you know, and of course the Italian, you know, you said you're half Italian, your mother's Italian,
right,
and all that. So, you know, I always wonder, you know, there's that song by the band War, why can't we be friends?
Why can't we all be friends?
Right. I mean, that's
I think most people, I mean, honestly, I think most people in America are pretty open-minded about things. It's, you know, you have people who are going to be on the far right who don't like anybody. There's nothing you can do. It's not just, you know, believe me, people tend to hate one group, hate a lot of other groups that aren't themselves, who aren't them. So it's not, you know, there are a lot of people in the South. I've done a lot of shows in the South, and you talk to Jewish groups who, you know, the same people say bad things about Muslims say bad things about the Jews down there. So, you know, we have this kind of camaraderie, depending where you live, of the oppressed in a way, so to speak. But, you know, with me, it was growing up Italian and Arab was interesting. I would go to, we would celebrate at the end of Ramadan, which is a Muslim, you know, holy month. We'd have a big party, Eid, and then on Christmas and Easter, my dad would come to church, and this is a completely true story. He took communion one time, and I said, Dad, why'd you take communion? What do you think of it? He goes, Dean, it needs more salt. I said, Dad, it's not a snack. It's the body of Christ. He goes, I understand, but why can't it taste better? Why can't you have, like, a baklava or, you know, nachos? That's fun. Everyone likes nachos. So, you know, we try to have fun with things. That actually happened. My dad, I don't even know why, to this day, why he took communion that day. He just went online and took it. But, and then I guess that was his effort of just trying to be part of my mother's Christian side of the family.
Sure. Well, Lenny Bruce was talking about his aunt one time where she was upset, that he had a tattoo, but she said, oi, why do you use such language? How does your father, for instance, as you said, a Palestinian Muslim, how does he relate to your comedy? Does he like it?
Well, yes. I mean, in general, my whole family is supportive of it. If it's funny, they laugh. If it's not funny, they don't like it. They go, that's not funny. You know, it's a whole different thing. And they understand that the comedy is about making people laugh, but there's also a little activism underneath it, and that we are trying to be funny and dispel stereotypes. I think the best way sometimes to attack some of the political issues are to raise them. You know, I give advice to Middle Eastern people when they're traveling to have less problems at the airport. I always tell them, I say, remember this expression, say, dress white, make your flight. You know, dress brown, never leave town. So, you try to give them advice about wearing, like, khaki pants and, you know, a polo shirt with a little animal, like a tiger, an alligator, not a camel. Camel won't help you. So, you know, and you try to, so you deal with issues like racial profiling at the airport, but you do it comedically, and you have fun about it, and you try to turn it around. So it's not this serious burden to everyone, that it's lighter, and you know, at times, you know, I think we're healing as a country, but at times certain issues raise up and get people a little angry again, and then thankfully it subsides.
And laughter is a great way to deal with it. And we're talking with Dean Obadalla, and he is one of the comics of the Arabs Gone Wild Comedy Revolution Tour. You can go to ArabsGoneWild.com. That's ArabsGoneWild.com. There'll be a link on my website as well, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. The comedy tour will stop in Dearborn on Sunday, March 20th, the Henry Ford Community College Auditorium. Two shows, 7 and 9 p.m. You can go to the Arabs Gone Wild website, and that'll have all the details and everything you need to know. We just have a few minutes left. You know, we've never even talked about your other two headliners. Just give us a little brief on them.
Sure. Well, we have Aaron Cater, who's great. He was on the Comedy Central Acts of Evil special with me, and he's been on Comics Unleashed with Byron Allen. He's from L.A. He's Palestinian-American. Very, very funny guy, and he's also very good looking, so women love him. You know, thankfully I've got a girlfriend, so I don't have to be jealous when all the women chase him after the show.
There you go.
And then Maysoon Zayed, who's a female Muslim comedian. There's not many, and she's really funny, very strong comic. Talks a lot about her family. She just got married. You know, she's been on Comedy Central with a watch list. She's on a PBS special, Muslim American Comedians Come of Age, recently. And she also has cerebral palsy, so she, you know, really is someone that you forget she has a disability when you watch her on stage. She's so strong. She's very independent. And, you know, women love her. Men like her, too, but women really are impressed with her.
Actually, I was going to ask that. Tell us a little more about Maysoon, because one does have, even with me, and I don't know, I mean, some stereotypes have to have some basis in reality, but that women often aren't aren't allowed to give full expression the way we've achieved here, in particularly among you know, immigrant groups. How does you say they relate to her and they like her? She must hit at some of those issues that are these contradictions between the generations.
Well, with Maysoon, no one's going to be able to ever censor her. She's much too strong of a woman to let that happen. And, you know, the audience has gotten to know her over the years. She's doing comedy for about 10 years, and me and Aaron have been doing a little bit longer, about 12 years. And she's really become a very, very funny comedian. So whatever kind of apprehension people may have had in the community years ago is long past. And she also has been a role model for a lot of other young female Arab and Muslim comedians to start out now there are a few more up and coming here in the States, and so that's great. She's playing two roles. She's, you know, a voice for women, and she's also a role model encouraging others to get involved in comedy, and that says more than any kind of speech anyone can do about, you know, Arabs or Muslims. It, you know, shows women being funny on stage and talking about relationships and making fun of men. That's what she does, is make fun of men. The whole act is about, which is great, and women love that.
That's making me laugh.
It's a great, no, believe me, you will laugh a lot, and that's what makes it special. We also have an opener who's from Dearborn, Mike Masalam, very funny young guy over there, and we try to have local comics from each city we're in the show to add a local flavor as well. You know, we don't want it to be just an import of a show. We want it to be sort of a hybrid with the community and with us coming to the show, and, you know, we're really looking forward to Dearborn. I
mean, yeah, have you been in Dearborn before?
I have a few times.
Yeah, and you've been?
Shows, not in a couple of years, though.
You've been to the Arab American Museum?
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
It
I
is
love
beautiful,
it. It's
yeah.
really awe-inspiring. And, I was there for the opening night. I actually hosted when Tony Shalhoub was there a few years ago when they had the opening gala event, and that was very, very, it made you proud, made me proud as Arab American to see that. And Italian Americans, we need something other than Jersey Shore. We need some kind of, on the other side. I mean, at some point I have to start doing some work for the Italians, because Jersey Shore, or the Sopranos, was bad. Jersey Shore makes the Sopranos look like Shakespeare. So, I mean, I like the Sopranos. I've always liked the Sopranos, I'll be honest, but you know, every ethnic group, every minority has have people that sort of embarrass you. Just a question of how much they embarrass you. That's all.
At and I see. Ooh, we're almost out of time. That should we get rid of the hyphens at some point? Should we get rid of Italian Americans, Jewish Americans, Irish Americans, what have you? Just be American. Some people say that. Actually, I kind of like that continuing ethnic identity. There's so much there that each group offers.
I think America is a hyphen country. I mean, that's our nature. And I think, thankfully, we can have multiculturalism while they're struggling with in other countries that have had, you know, if you're British, you're British. Like, if you watch the World Cup soccer match, that's when I see it. You see all the names of other countries. You see, like, the English team and the teams from Amsterdam and Sweden, and they all have their names are almost all the same. When you see the American World Cup team, everyone's name is from some other country, because we're a country of immigrants. We are a melting pot. And I think that's a lot of our strength comes from that. So it would be a shame to lose it, but I think all of us are, you know, I'm proudly American, but I'm also proudly of Arab heritage and Italian. But, you know, I'm really grateful that America allowed my father to come here and my Sicilian grandparents to come here and have a much better life than either would have had back in their home countries.
Well, it's been so good talking to you, and I think it's going to even be better when people come out to see you and the other two co-headliners on March 20th, a Sunday, yes, at the Henry Ford Community College Auditorium. Two shows, 7 and 9, if this is going by too quickly, if you're in your car. You can go to ArabsGoneWild.com, and that comes from the title of the tour, the Arabs Gone Wild Comedy Revolution Tour. It's going to be in Chicago, San Francisco, San Diego, and L.A., as well as Dearborn. My guest has been Dean Ubadala, and I want to thank you so much for being on the show. Thanks for having joined me.
Thank you for having me on, Peter. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? Protect your home with a security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer. Call now and get $850 of hardware and activation for free. Call 1-877-653-8844. That's 1-877-653-8844. $99 installation charge. 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions and Protect Your Home license number.
Homeowners, the mortgage market is starting to move, but the good news is rates are still incredibly low. Don't miss this opportunity to refinance your mortgage. Call Quicken Loans at 888-249-1425. Quicken Loans is America's home loan experts, closing 1 million home loans over 25 years. And recently, J.D. Power & Associates ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction in primary mortgage origination. Find out how quick and easy it is to refinance with Quicken Loans. Call right now for a free rate quote and see how much Quicken Loans can lower your monthly payment. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425. For J.D. Power & Associates award information, visit jdpower.com. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide mortgage licensing system number 3030. That's Quicken Loans. 888-249-1425. 888-249-1425.
Our son would go from "Good morning, Mom," to words you'd never expect to come out of your child's mouth. Our pain came from not knowing what to do. He was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. 5 or 6 years later, he was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. I think the hardest part of living with someone who has a mental illness is thinking that you're alone, that no one else could understand. NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is made up of people who live it every day. We lean on each other and we learn from each other. NAMI doesn't let anyone give up hope. My name is Mary Tadikin, and I can tell you what NAMI has meant for my family. It has meant that we are a family.
1 in 5 adults lives with depression, schizophrenia, anxiety, or other mental illnesses. NAMI provides education and support to these families and individuals. To find a local chapter, go to NAMI.org or call 800-950-NAMI.
Is it time for a new roof? If the roof on your house is old, weathered, or in need of help, you can save $500 if you call Sears Roofing right now. Call Sears for a free in-home consultation at 1-877-938-1414. Call right now and you can save $500. Sears licensed, fully insured contractors can get your roofing job done right. Just call 1-877-938-1414. Sears has a variety of shingles and styles that are built for long-lasting performance. And you'll save $500 if you call now. So call 1-877-938-1414. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. So call Sears Roofing and save $500. Call 1-877-938-1414. That's 1-877-938-1414. Sears.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar. Burglars prefer to break in when they think no one is home and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Pick up your phone now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alerts, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-877-653-8844. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-877-653-8844. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and protect your home license numbers. Call now, 1-877-653-8844. That's 1-877-653-8844.
The message that the aliens are broadcasting throughout the entire universe.
Back to the Rock. On the Rear.
We all got to be true, we're drifting through.
40th anniversary concert with Stone Temple Pilots. Tickets for STP are going fast. Get yours now at all Ticketmaster outlets or online at LiveNation.com. From Live Nation and 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.